This is the Quality News Network. On Wall Street today, the Dow Jones was down nearly 200 points at the close of this week's trading. We'll have the final numbers coming up in our business block. The space shuttle Atlantis landed successfully about an hour ago at Edwards Air Force Base in California. NASA managers made the decision to land there because for the second day in a row, rain prevented a landing at Florida's Kennedy Space Center. In North Charleston, South Carolina today, thousands of firefighters from across the country gathered to pay their respects to the 9 firefighters who were killed earlier this week battling a furniture warehouse fire. The Associated Press reports that the White House may close the prison at Guantanamo Bay where many suspected terrorists are held. However, the White House says no decision is imminent. The U.S. is building a prison in Afghanistan for terror suspects, but White House officials say it is not meant to be an alternative to the Guantanamo facility. U.S. troops in Iraq continue to battle al-Qaeda militants as part of an offensive in Bakuba, north of Baghdad. The U.S. military says that more than three-quarters of the al-Qaeda leaders left the area before the U.S. forces went in. The CIA will declassify hundreds of pages of secret documents from the 1950s to the 1970s. CIA Director Michael Hayden said the information will include details about assassination attempts, domestic spying, and other activities. The Assistant Secretary of State, Christopher Hill, wrapped up his surprise two-day trip to North Korea. He said the communist country appears to be willing to keep its pledge to halt its nuclear program. However, he cautioned that that would be a lengthy process. Next week, diplomats from America, Europe, Russia, and the United Nations will meet in Jerusalem to discuss the Gaza Strip, which was seized by Hamas militants last week. On Monday, Israeli, Palestinian, Egyptian, and Jordanian leaders will meet in Sharm el-Sheikh, an Egyptian resort area. The UC Berkeley graduate student who was driving author David Halberstam to an interview before he was killed in a car crash will face a misdemeanor vehicular manslaughter charge for the accident. The 26-year-old journalism student could receive up to a year in jail and a $1,000 fine if he is convicted. You're listening to the Quality News Network, science and business news coming up next.
To be or not to be, that is the question.
Proficiency in reading and writing is a crucial connection to higher learning for both youth and adults. Without the foundation of basic English skills, access to education and employment is severely limited, if not impossible, for an estimated 40 million illiterate and semi-literate adults nationwide. If someone you know needs help in learning to read and write, there are local groups that can provide assistance without the threat of embarrassment. The Monterey County Free Library System offers unlimited one-on-one classes meant to help anyone at any proficiency level step over the language barrier. Weekly classes are held at several free library locations across Monterey County at no charge. For more information on Monterey County Free Library's Adult Literacy Program, call 424-3564. This message brought to you by the Quality News Network.
The FDA will issue new regulations for dietary supplements such as vitamins and herbal pills. The product's manufacturers will have to test all of their ingredients first. Research in the journal Science finds that the IQs of firstborns are 2 to 3 points higher than those of their younger siblings. The study finds that it is not because of genetics, but how the children are raised. The American Medical Association will decide whether video game addiction should be considered a mental illness. Japan's Hitachi has unveiled technology that reads a customer's brain activity to operate electronic devices. The brain-machine interface technique translates brain motion into electric signals. According to a market survey, Apple's iTunes Music Store is now the third largest music retailer in the U.S. with a 10% market share behind Walmart, which is number one, and Best Buy, which is number two. Amazon.com dropped to fourth place. NBC News is denying reports it will pay Paris Hilton $1 million for her first interview after she is released from jail. Light sweet crude is trading at $69.14 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange, and at the close of Wall Street this week, a triple-digit loss for the Dow Jones, which ended down 186 points. The NASDAQ was down 28. There's always more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Allie Dramoff.
Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! A mighty good evening to you from the hills and hollers of wild, wonderful West by God, Virginia. I'm Bob Kincaid, glad to be with you at week's end. You may think it's time to let down your hair and relax a little bit, but I got news for you, it's not. We've still got business to do. We've got 3 hours to cuss and discuss this evening, and we're going to start that discussion this evening, most particularly in regard to a new report that came out yesterday. It came out from the Center for American Progress in conjunction with the Free Press. The formal title of that report is... I was too far down in the PDF file. The formal title of the report is The Structural Imbalance of Political Talk Radio, and it is... it's rather scientific. It is intellectual, and it is a sort of follow the dots, bit by bit explanation of how it is that right wing radio came to be radio that's right wing. In other words, how the right wing came to dominate the airwaves in terms of talk and talk programming. On the line with us now is one of the co-authors of that report. His name is Mark Lloyd. Mr. Lloyd, among other things, has been the visiting Martin Luther King Jr. Scholar at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT, where he taught communications policy. He also wrote and conducted research on the relationship between communications policy and strong democratic communities. He's also been the executive director of the Civil Rights Forum on Communications Policy. That's a nonprofit, nonpartisan project that he co-founded in 1997 to bring civil rights principles and advocacy to the communications policy debate. It would certainly sound that he is more than qualified to sit in authorship of this particular study. And in addition to those things, Mr. Lloyd has also been in the journalistic trenches, serving, working as a reporter and a producer both at NBC and CNN. Mr. Lloyd, thank you for joining us this evening. I'm very glad to have you on board.
It's my pleasure to be here.
Let's start with the basics on this report. I suppose what we've wondered, those of us in the liberal and progressive broadcast community, just exactly how much we were getting outgunned. Y'all were able to find that out, weren't you?
Oh, yeah, by 10 times as much. Conservative talk dominates the airways in many markets to an incredible amount. And nationally, the figures that we came up with is that, particularly for the largest group owners, conservative talk provides about 2,500 hours a week, every weekday, and progressive talk provides about 250 hours of progressive talk. I mean, this is, again, a 10-time advantage that conservative talk has over progressive.
That's rather astonishing. And I don't understand it, Mr. Lloyd. Is it the problem that all progressive talkers are just drier than a snake's belly in a wagon rut, and Rush Limbaugh's the cotton-picking exciting that nobody can stand themselves? I mean, is that what's going on here?
Well, that's certainly what the conservatives like to think. Some of them can be pretty dry as well, and some of the progressives and liberal talk show hosts can actually be pretty funny. The challenge, though, really has to do with the ownership and the fact that we've got a wide variety of owners who prefer conservative talk, pro-business talk, and are for whatever reason afraid of progressive talk, even if progressive talk brings in numbers in the ratings. so you end up with this incredible structural imbalance.
Well, you mentioned the business community. Is it easier to sell conservative talk than it is to sell progressive talk? Is it a matter of there's more conservative businessmen out there? Is that part of this equation?
Well, I think that's right. I mean, I think, first of all, conservative business people tend to listen to more conservative talk than they do liberal talk. But the other thing is that you end up with progressives and liberals who may discuss, say, the environment and take on the problems of Procter & Gamble or GE. They may mention businesses that that might not be real happy to be heard in a negative light. You don't usually have that challenge with conservative talk. Conservative talkers tend to take on immigrants and a wide variety of
helpless people.
Exactly. Don't have the same sort of bucks to put into advertising. And
there's nothing to make.
It's certainly an imbalance there.
There's nothing to make you feel quite so studly as beating up on an immigrant or a helpless female mother of three with no support system.
Well, that's right.
That's quite the brave and bold crowd the conservatives offering out there.
Well, and then they've gotten to the point where now even Trent Lott is upset with them because of what they've been doing regarding the immigration debate.
Well, we had the story last night. Trent Lott wants to electrify the immigrants.
Yeah.
Great guy, that Trent Lott.
That's right.
But you know, all kidding aside, for every 1 minute that I speak, there is 10 minutes of conservative hate speak on the radio.
That's right.
That is astonishing to me.
Yeah. So it is just phenomenal. And again, the reasons for this have to do not just with owners per se, but with the rules that we put in place about who actually gets to own the airwaves and who gets to determine what talk you get. And those are federal rules. And since the 1996 Telecommunications Act, which lifted all the national caps on radio ownership, there was just an explosion in the number of conservative talk show hosts across the country. It's a lot easier to push Rush Limbaugh on people and to pipe in Sean Hannity rather than hire local hosts that might actually reflect the diversity of political opinion in the local community.
Well, you said you used a phrase a few moments ago, Mr. Lloyd. You said the variety of station ownerships. I might suggest that the problem is exactly the opposite. It's the absence of variety in station ownership, isn't it?
No, that's right. I mean, so we've had in radio at least some consolidation among the owners. So we have fewer owners than we had back in 96. I don't think there's any question about that. And these fewer owners work to make sure that they can limit their cost and take advantage of efficiencies and sort of market speak. And as a result of that, you end up with fewer people on the air. And fewer people on the air means you have less diverse viewpoint and less diverse opinion being expressed.
Could I take this in a slightly different direction? There's a limited spectrum bandwidth, if you will, of available radio in America. Since the Telecommunications Act, as you mentioned it, allowed so much radio to be bought up, where, assuming we could find the people who could do it and had the money and the desire and the know-how, where can the progressive community find stations to own?
Well, again, this is a part of the big problem. And you know, one of the things that happens with major owners is that even if they put on progressive talk, they tend to put them on the weaker stations in the community. So you've got, you know, a major, you know, megawatt station blasting out conservative talk, and you've got this sort of tinny, hard to hear AM station with maybe a progressive talk show on it, owned by the same owner. So there are some choices being made that limit the variety and diversity available to people who might want to listen.
So, you know, a 50,000-watt blowtorch versus a 5,000-watt flickering candle flame.
Exactly.
With
and
a conscious
decision.
Well,
the public is deciding because they just like the conservatives better. And the public has really very limited choice.
The public's choice is limited by what the scan button can find inside the blue Buick.
That's exactly.
Okay. Well, then, I noticed, I actually read the report. I found it fascinating. I noticed that where stations are owned by minorities, women, the odds of them carrying conservative yammer decreased dramatically. Did I understand that correctly?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, the women and minority owners tend to put on product that is more suited to their taste. This is why ownership matters. They tend to put on product that is more directly relevant to audiences that are mainly comprised of women and minorities. So you have less Rush and less Sean Hannity, and you know, and
oddly less Dr. Laura.
That's right. And so, but part of the challenge is that we need to make sure that, I mean, not only that we get more women and minorities on the air, or that we even get more progressive talk on the air, but that we get talk on the air that more broadly reflects the diversity in communities around the country. Not just talk that I might agree with or you might agree with, but talk that really reflects the diversity of not just, you know, what's happening in, you know, small quarters of New York or Los Angeles, but what might actually be happening in Albuquerque or Kipsey.
Up some holler in West Virginia.
That's right.
Yeah. It seems to me that you point, Mr. Lloyd, to another problem, although I didn't sense a direct a discussion of it, and that is what we were talking about, marketing. We also need people out there who know how to market progressive or whatever we're going to call it talk in various and sundry audiences. There are a lot more working people for whom working people's issues one would think would be important and interesting, but it sounds to me like there's also a problem in finding people who know how to sell that. Is that fair?
I would not disagree with the notion that progressives and liberals must do a much better job of making sure their voices are heard in whatever venues they've got available to them, and also selling a product that people want. I mean, there are people like Michael Moore, for example, who's, you know, demonstrated there are people who actually want this content. There is a large audience out there of folks who are really hungry for entertaining, amusing, informative, thought-provoking, liberal talk. And, you know, we need to do a much better job of selling it. We need to do a much better job of making sure that those stations can actually be heard by people around.
And that goes to the previous decision that you described, in which an owner will have two stations, one a blowtorch, the other a flickering candle flame, and it's almost without fail, is it not, that the flickering candle flame gets the progressive talk?
Yeah, that's been pretty much the case. We've been talking with Clear Channel about it, and oddly enough, they've been somewhat receptive to these arguments. But it's certainly the case that the tendency is to make sure that the conservative talk that has been a proven money winner for them gets the better station. And so instead of taking a chance and making sure that they've got two operations on at least providing both progressive and conservative talk, they tend to, you know, put the money and all the resources behind the conservative guys.
But there seems to be a false dichotomy here, Mr. Lloyd. Why is it? I mean, let's just imagine a blowtorch. Why can't there be Rush from noon to three and, say, for lack of a better, Stephanie Miller from three to six? Why does it have to be compartmentalized?
Yeah, it doesn't make an awful lot of sense to me, but if you're just sort of looking at advertising practices, one of the challenges that you want to sell a station. So, the easiest way to make sure that you've got both an audience that flows from one program to the other is to make sure that the content is the same. It's sort of like making sure if you're playing country music that you don't switch from, you know, country to hard rock. So you tend to keep them on the same station. And there is some justification for that, although block programming formats, and this is probably getting far more technical than anybody.
We do technical here, don't worry.
Yeah, that But that, I mean, that block programming formats are something that have a long history in American radio, and you can certainly go from, you know, Stephanie to Rush. I mean, but the tendency for advertising executives just to sell a station. So you're going to get this the entire day, and you know, don't worry about that. Wherever we put your ad, it's, you know, not going to be next to some guy that you're going to feel uncomfortable with. So
at the end of the day, is this more about, or is the solution to this problem more about the advertiser or about the listener? Because those seem to be two very different and competing philosophies. There's radio that is presented for the sake of the audience, and there is radio that is presented as a life support system to sell the local, the local insurance agent.
Well, as an old radio broadcaster, I would argue again that the real problem are the rules that the people we hire in Washington make. And that if you limit the number of stations that any one group can own, and if you create more diversity of ownership, then you will have advertisers who the folks who are selling advertisers experiment with maybe block programs. Maybe their approach to selling products will differ depending on the diversity. But the challenge is if you've got maybe 10 owners of, you know, most of the outlets around the country, they tend to concentrate and do the same things. And so we want more diversity across the board. We want more diversity in local programming. We want more diversity of music. We want more diversity of the kind of talk. But we also want more diversity in maybe deciding how you're actually going to sell your station, more diversity in how you actually manage your station. We want more diversity across the board. And that can only come with a change in regulation at the federal level, and again, our representatives in Congress are responsible for this.
Does the Fairness Doctrine play into this anywhere?
Well, we make the argument that there's still very basic language in the Communications Act that argues that stations have a responsibility to put on content that responds to the needs and interests of local communities, and that was part of the core part of the Fairness Doctrine, and that the Fairness Doctrine worked to the degree that it could work when there was a regime in place that required licenses to actually be up every 3 years, that had comparative hearing processes so that people in the local communities could actually challenge the license of the local station, that required the local station to actually interview local leaders and put on issues that were of concern to the local community, that also worked in concert with the National Association of Broadcasters Code of Conduct. I know we've forgotten about that, but there was a code of conduct in place that was voluntary by the NAB. Well, all those things in concert with the Fairness Doctrine worked to make sure that we had a little bit more balance, particularly regarding local content on the air than we do now. So just putting the Fairness Doctrine back wouldn't do it. We have to do a few other things as well.
Okay, so I mean, you mentioned that code of conduct, and my mind immediately flashed, Mr. Lloyd, to a statement made by Glenn Beck, that paragon of radio morality, in which he suggested that he would gleefully murder Michael Moore, because you mentioned Mr. Moore a little bit ago. And also to a statement made by a guest of his in the not-too-distant past as to how he would like to blow away Hillary Clinton. How can a station owner listen to that, Mr. Lloyd, and think that that is something that he can be proud of putting over the public airwaves every day?
Well, I think that's a legitimate question. And another legitimate question, which also came up during the Don Imus controversy, was, you know, is this something that advertisers ought to be supporting? And, you know, why are you putting your ad dollars behind folks who say these sort of things? But again, our report is really very careful to be clear that we are not calling for censorship. That we are not for less speech. Well, all we're saying is that we need more diverse speech on the air. We need to give local folks a chance to actually hear the issues that are important to them. And that the idea that a 10-to-1 advantage for conservative talk represents what the community, what almost any community actually thinks or wants, is clearly not the case.
Well, and that brings me to another topic, and that is the people who do it themselves, namely the talkers. To the extent that there's 10-to-1, 10 minutes for every minute, 10 minutes of conservative talk for every minute of liberal or progressive talk, that's also a function, is it not, of the fact that there are 10 conservative talkers for every liberal talker, if not more.
Oh yeah, yeah. So there are more conservative talkers, but the fact is, I used to work in radio. If I were continuing to work in radio and I'm a liberal talk show host, and it's hard for me to find a venue or job, I'd get out. And so after a while, you drive good people who want to do good programs out of the business because the owners aren't paying them. The owners aren't putting them on 300 stations or 400 stations or, you know, dominating a market. You know, it works so that the ultimate responsibility really rests with the people that we vote for who put in the rules that allow organizations to buy up entire markets. And again, we have to hold ourselves responsible for that. We just can't say, Rush said this, or Don Imus said that, or somebody else said this. We've got to hold ourselves responsible in a democracy to make sure that our representatives have actually put up rules to make sure we've got a fair chance to hear issues that are important to us.
Well, you and I, it turns out, are both co-alums of a certain institution, if you will. I too was at CNN for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And I, that's did radio news anchoring, that kind of thing. But I determined that my love was this particular format, talk, and came back to it after a while. And what you say about owners won't pay for it is very true. But by the same token, Mr. Lloyd, way back when Rush Limbaugh only had one ditto instead of megas, there were conservative organizations out there like the Heritage Foundation that didn't care if he had one listener or a million.
That's right.
They were going to carry him. They were going to get the message out. They were going to create the medium.
Yeah.
Now, as someone who we left terrestrial radio and we created this network on the internet, we know that there is a hunger for the programming because we're very little behind us. We're reaching about 100,000 people a week. Okay, so we know there's
me at all. Yeah.
We know that there is a desire for the programming there. Where we run up against a problem, and it's not just us. I've had conversations with other people who do this sort of thing, is that everybody says, "Oh yeah, that's great, wonderful, you're doing it. Make sure we're on the Christmas card list." You want money?
Right.
Oh, sorry.
Right.
And if you get $10.75 from a liberal think tank, we need a strict accounting for the paper clips.
Right.
Now,
right.
And that leads to a little bit of frustration, Mr. Lloyd, because there are those of us out there who have the drive and the passion and the talent to do this, and who are doing it. But where is the infrastructure inside the progressive community?
Well, that's right. Well, in America, you got to have the money in order to support the people to do the work. I mean, that's just that's the way it works here. And you're also absolutely right that in the 70s and in the early 80s, not only libertarian conservatives at places like Heritage, Cato, but the Christian conservatives, Pat Robertson, and these guys bought up radio, they bought up cable networks. I mean, Fox News is another perfect example of this. They went after the media. They went after the media, they changed the rules, and they began to purchase operations. And that has had a direct impact on what it is people think and who they're voting for and how they affiliate themselves and what they even think about the term liberal and all the rest of that stuff. The folks on our side really sort of said, well, yeah, we probably agree the media is liberal and so we don't need to do anything. And it's it is a frustration for those of us who've worked in the industry for, you know, for so long, sort of seeing the conservatives understand the importance of this tool of media and of progressives and liberals just really not taking it seriously.
Well, I wonder, because it's obvious there was so much hard work that went into this report, Mr. Lloyd, I wonder if the people that need to read it are going to read it, because I sense a certain, when you get amongst particular groups, there's a certain snobbery about talk radio that, you know, those people, the beer drinkers, they listen to it. You know, that's why they like Rush. He's a lowbrow. And as a consequence, they don't care that talk radio, because, you see, I don't know about you. I sense that it does matter to you because you're involved with this report. I hold the position that that talk radio did as much or more damage under its control by the right to the body politic of this country as any single entity in this country.
Well, I would not disagree with you about that at all. We've also done some studies of Fox News, which is pretty horrifying, but. The point is, I think, well made, and I can only tell you that in some of the conversations that I've been in among politicians and the Democratic Party, they take the audience of talk radio very seriously. I mean, there may be, you know, some elites working someplace who don't understand that they need to be able to reach that audience and speak effectively to that audience, but. Among the folks that I've been having conversations with in the Democratic Party, and certainly the folks here at the Center for American Progress, we understand we need to be able to reach working class Americans, whatever color they are, and try to explain why their interest in making sure they have a living wage and that they have a clean environment and they've got products that are safe and all the rest of these things are really... are really with the progressives, and they're not necessarily with the conservatives. And so, I sense less of that sort of elitism, believe it or not, at least among working politicians. Not to say that it doesn't exist somewhere, but the folks that I've been talking with understand that part of it is, though, that if you listen to Sean Hannity or if you listen to Rush Limbaugh, many of us sort of listen to that and go, can anybody take these guys seriously?
Oh, yeah, and I've nearly run into a couple of phone calls along the way.
And go, well, you know, this guy is just funny. I mean, no one really thinks this guy is a policy analyst or that he has any clue about what's happening in America.
Oh, yeah, you listen to Barack the Magic Negro and you sit there, oh, that's a real knee slapper.
Right.
And I wonder, you know, I hear this stuff, Mr. Lloyd, and I wonder about my country.
Yeah.
You know, because is there somebody out there that says, yeah, boy, I tell you what, he's a creative soul, that Mr. Limbaugh, that drug addict. And I don't, that's why I was asking you the questions. Is it about the audience? Is it about the advertising? Because, you know, you tune into these right-wing talkers, whether it's the Savage Wiener or the Oxymoron or the life support system for a haircut, Hannity, or the falafel guy, and what you find is on all of them you hear the same advertisements.
Oh yeah.
It's Swedish mattresses. It's herbal erection remedies over-the-counter baldness cures and vacuum cleaners that pick up bowling balls.
Yeah.
there cannot be that many millions of dollars in those products.
Well, it's certainly strange to listen to this, but again, I would like to emphasize the fact that my sense is not that we devalue that audience at all. There's certainly a challenge with the owners, and we've got lots of problems with some of these owners. Some of the owners we've been really trying to talk to.
Is this a divestiture issue? I mean, is this like breaking up Ma Bell in the 70s? Is this a divestiture issue, do you think?
Yeah, I think it really is. Because what's at stake is not just entertainment programming. I mean, what's at stake is whether local communities actually have access to information they need to make decisions in their local communities about what they want to have done. And that's a large part of what radio is for.
And, you know, you bring something to the fore there, and I think it's very important because one of the economic drumbeats, whether it be Republican or Democrat, is always jobs, 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 jobs. How many jobs in America have dried up because of the consolidation of media ownership and the fact that Les Nessman is no longer slaving away over a hot typewriter in the middle of podunk trying to put out the evening news? You know, those used to be real jobs.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It used to be real jobs. There used to be a farm system in place that the network could pull from, you know, with talent that had been trained, with people who were actually committed to local communities. I mean, I used to work in local radio and local television. I had very strong images of people who used to do that stuff who didn't want to go anyplace else, who wanted to
exactly
their local community.
And, you know, I was the pimply-faced kid on the midnight shift.
Yeah. And so, you know,
but those jobs don't exist anymore.
But that's not because of the market. That's because of the rules that we put in place.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And we allow we allow the music stations to turn into jukeboxes.
Yeah.
Where you voice track for 20 minutes and you've pulled a 5-hour shift and the station owner just got away scot free.
No, absolutely right. I'm from Detroit, and without, frankly, a black owned radio operation or a couple black owned radio operations in Detroit, which is really quite unique, Motown would not have had much of a chance.
No.
So it is local radio is so important.
Oh yeah. Well,
the national radio is not important too, but we've got to have a better mix than we've got now.
We certainly do, and I mean I'm not this is not trumpet tooting, but every 2 weeks I used to get Sam Phillips's autograph. If you know who Sam was, Sun Records,
yeah.
Memphis.
Yeah.
He owned one of the stations where I began my career, and they were dedicated. Sam was dedicated to bringing up that new talent. You
That's
used a
right.
very important
That's
phrase there a few minutes ago.
Yep.
Farm system, because you know what? The lovely daisy that is Stephanie Miller does not suddenly spring from the earth next to the deadly nightshade of Rush Limbaugh.
That's right. Yeah, that's absolutely right.
So I would hope that maybe if you talk to your colleagues a little bit, while I understand the thrust of what you are talking about in terms of regulatory schemes, we also need the infrastructure, because if suddenly we get to the point where, ooh, hot diggity, we're gonna have 50,000 watt liberal blowtorches, somebody's gonna have to be behind the microphone of excellence there.
Oh, that's right. I mean, again, as an old radio guy, I could not agree with you more. And you know, we've got to push folks to, again, whether they're progressive or liberal or whatever they are, to make sure that they actually understand the importance of the media, and that they put the resources they need to put into it to change it. So,
is there a campaign behind this, Mr. Lloyd? Is this a, you know, call your senator, write your congressman? Is there pending legislation, or is it just a sort of a generic, you know, write them a letter and say this has to be fixed?
Well, we've been talking with folks at Free Press and Move On and a few other organizations about the feasibility of the campaign. There is an ongoing effort around media reform in this country and a lot of concern around media consolidation. The FCC right now is continuing to have hearing, listening to the public about what ought to happen. So we've been saying, here's a study of what's going on with radio and the talk and what it means in our communities, and this is what needs to be done. So there is a campaign underway that Free Press has been running, particularly around media consolidation, and we wholeheartedly support that and would direct people, if they want to really get involved, that, you know, our partner in this report, Free Press, has got a campaign up and going.
Well, that's so folks can go to, what is it, freepress.org?
I believe it's either freepress.org or freepress.net. Either one of those will get you there, though.
Okay, so people can't, there is a mean, and of course they can read the report, and that's available at thinkprogress.org, right?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Well, Mr. Lloyd.
Again, I just want to stress, hold your representative that you pay, that you elect, accountable.
Exactly. And, you know, insofar as the FCC is a function of the executive branch, what happens in 2008 is kind of important too, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Because the Michael Powells of this world won't be on the FCC if there's a Democrat in the White House, at least
that's
we hope not.
That's right. That's
well,
right.
I tell you what, I've greatly enjoyed this conversation. I hope it hasn't been too painful to you. I'm sure you've done a million of them so far.
No, it's a pleasure. It's great to talk to Stowe and I. And again, I'm an old radio guy, so I really enjoy talking.
Well, I hope we can talk again sometime. I'd like to... At some point, you know, I have a vested interest in this because we are liberal, we are progressive, and frankly, we're producing a 24/7 stream right now that could be picked up by any station in the country.
That's great stuff.
And we've done it on next to nothing. The only problem is, like I said, we got to find the people that don't want the close accounting of the paperclip budget.
That's right.
So, you know, whether it's you or someone else inside Think Progress, I'd like to sit down and do a little brainstorming because, like I said, it takes somebody inside this to understand how important it is and what a change it has wrought on the political landscape.
Yeah.
And if we would like to countervail that 10 minutes for every one, 10 hours for every one, 10 days, 10 years for every one that you have uncovered and identified, we have to be prepared to put the programming in place.
You're absolutely right. We've got to support the folks that are out there.
Well, I think...
got an open line. Please, let's stay in touch and talk about it.
I think that would be wonderful. And, again, I hope you're able to get this message out because I'm a radio geek. I love radio, and I'd like to see it be a little bit more of what it was in the past, when you had a local connection to your station.
Right.
There are real world concerns with this too. I think a story from a few years ago, it was a Clear Channel station in one of the Dakotas. There was a train derailment and a tank full of chlorine gas heading toward a city. You know, death in the air. And the emergency authorities couldn't raise anybody at the radio station because the only thing at the radio station was a downlink.
That's right.
That's Homeland Security, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I mean, we've got amazing emergency problems in this country. And again, it's just the notion that you give anybody a free federal license to broadcast, but not hold them to any obligations to serve that local community, and it's scandalous. We've got to do something about it.
Well, it certainly is. I mean, I think about having been raised in Alabama. I think about tornadoes.
Yeah.
On the Gulf Coast, I think about hurricanes. In the Great Midwest, when the tornado comes bearing down the plains, frankly, Glenn Beck isn't much help.
That's right.
Unless it's like WKRP and it's a godless liberal tornado.
Right.
Mr. Lloyd, thank you very kindly. You all have done wonderful work with this report, and I wish you the very best in spreading the word and making change. We will certainly help where we possibly can.
Oh, well, my pleasure, and thank you for helping get the word out.
You take care now, and have a wonderful weekend.
You too.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Mark Lloyd from the Center for American Progress, thinkprogress.org. It's about 242 pages of the report, but it is an eye-opener. This is the kind of stuff that you and I talk about that we suspect, but this is, you know, up in your face. You can, oh Jesus, it's on page 36. You can see it, and you can also measure by virtue of the response from the wrong wing, how correct it is, because they are having an absolute purple screaming polka dotted hissy about this report.
Oh, Jesus, they're trying to shut down talk radio. They're going to censor me. I'm sure that the Savage Wiener is on the air right now screaming that he will lead a Nazi march on Washington if anything. See, this is kind of what we were talking about a little bit last night. Michael Wiener, Rusty Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, if in fact that is his real name, Bill Falafel O'Reilly, Dr. Laura, who couldn't put a Band-Aid on somebody without damn near killing him. All of these people don't give a damn what happens in Washington. They don't give a damn what happens in Tallahassee or Okaloosa or Muscle Shoals or Peoria or Lawrence, Kansas or Dimebox, Texas or Sedona, Arizona. They don't give a damn. What they care about is their bank balance. And they made a commitment long ago that they're stuck with now. They're married to it. They're at that sort of white flag, you know, I will go down with this ship thing. They can't get away from their stupid ideology. And so every day they have to go on the air and ratchet it up one more notch. A little nastier, a little nastier, a little nastier. Make the country a little more hateful, a little more hateful, a little more hateful. Make the gap a little wider, the divide a little broader, the river a little bit too far to swim. For one reason and one reason only, and it's not politics, baby. It's money. I don't know of anybody out there that wants Limbaugh money on our side unless, well, okay, maybe Ed Schultz. You know, there was Ed on the air this morning, and he asked a very fair question. Ed's not my favorite, but it's a fair question. And why they had him on the air with a yutz like Michael Smirkanish, who sounds like a social disease? I'm sorry, you've got the Smirkanish. Nothing we can do about it. It's got to come off. He says, I beat Sean Hannity in Denver, I beat him in Seattle, I beat him in Portland, I beat him in San Diego. How many markets do I have to beat Hannity in before I get 200 or 300 stations? See, this problem really is an onion of sorts. You got to have the talent. You've got to have the stations. But frankly, you've got to have the Herb Tarlicks who know how to sell this stuff if you're going to do it on commercial radio. If you're going to do it on a local basis, you got to have the guy in the plaid jacket who knows every last used car dealer in town and every insurance agent and every beauty shop owner and the couple who owns the gym and goes to the Rotary every time they open the door. You gotta have those people, and they gotta know how to sell liberal, progressive talk. This does not happen overnight. What you see now is the product of a determination that was made on election night 1964 when the Republicans looked up and went, dang, we just got our guts stomped out. We don't like this. This hurts a lot. We don't ever want it to happen again. And proceeded to put things in place, and you could hear Mr. Lloyd agreed, where they would support the rise and development of a media infrastructure that could take really rotten issues and jam them down America's throat. You know, basically hand them a handful of chicken poop and tell them it was chicken salad, and America would go, yum, yum. And they succeeded. And they succeeded in large part because our side quit the field.
I'm glad Mr. Lloyd says that people are paying attention and think and understand now that talk radio is important. I hope they understand how important. Well, it seems kind of stupid to take a break at 10 minutes till the hour, but we're going to anyway. What do you think? How do you combat this? He said that, you know, when you get right down to it, we're talking about a divestiture. You think there's a liberal infrastructure out there that would own radio stations and has the money to and would be willing to take pimply-faced high school seniors and teach them the journalism trade from the ground up?
Cub reporter Bob Kincaid on the scene. This is America's liberal voice. This is the horn. This is where the future begins. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
This is Billy Shears. This coming Tuesday, June 26th, the Head On Radio Network will go dark. I believe this is the right thing to do, and the horn feels very strongly that an attack on one segment of Internet radio constitutes an attack on all Internet radio. On the day of the stand down, Head On will keep the chat room open, so pop in to show your support. Try to imagine conversation radio without music. I know I can't.
I'm getting so sick of hearing people try to minimalize what's going on. And China's up to it now, too. This idea that, you know, we're going to try and make moves, but not at the detriment to our economy. Hello! How many times do I have to say this? No planet, no economy. No planet, no business. No planet, no commerce. Drives me absolutely insane. And like I said last week, we have George W. Bush pressuring the G8 to soften their language while at the same time making public statements to tell the G8 to get with the program. Excuse me? What bloody planet are you on?
Join me for Foxed Up here on the Head On Radio Network. Moving to 10 a.m. weekdays, Monday, June 18th, here on the Head On Radio Network.
Those people I know think that I'm crazy.
Yeah.
tune, Agnes. Great tune, Billy Shears. Hey, by the way, the Monday Billy Shears guest commentary is none other than our own beloved Cossack from the chat room, riding across the steps to bring us his musical interpretations. BillyShearsMusic.com. 4 minutes before the hour, we'll take it up to the news real quick. You know, sometimes I just love me. Namely, the lovely daisy that is Stephanie Miller springing up next to the noxious ragweed that is Rush Limbaugh. Dang, where do I get this? But really, that's the truth, isn't it? Conservative radio spread across the national landscape like crabgrass on a Bermuda grass lawn. And it's hard to kill. It's hard to deal with. And there's nothing to commend it. Unless, of course, I haven't met those people that sit there and, ho, 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 I love it when Glenn Beck says he wants to put a bullet through Hillary's brain. Ho, ho, ain't that funny? Jesus. So, okay, crabgrass has a purpose in this world. Right-wing talk doesn't. Well, yeah, it's a... but again, it's about the audience, isn't it? You know, I'll be quite blunt. I don't know if the dedication that we have to you guys here with the horn on the internets, the series of tubes, it's not a big truck. I don't know if that comes across on radio. I don't know if it can come across if every 15 minutes I have to stop to do a commercial for the local snake farm agent. So it's just... But really, more than anything else, we've got to be ready to step into the void. Because with something like divestiture, a void would be created. And the other issue that he raises is the issue of diversity. And we are trying to expand the diversity here at the Horn. And all we need are more people who are willing to work for free, just like we do. There's got to be more people out there, right? Well, it's more than that. There's got to be a little bit of talent involved. And as anyone who will... Well, there's a certain amount of dedication in crawling in behind the microphone every day. I'm not sitting, you know, you don't, no, don't tell me to get off the cross because you need the wood. That's not what this is about. But it can't be a hobby. It cannot be a hobby, and my personal philosophy is, if it comes from a place where you do it because, you know, you think there's a bunch of money in it, you will fail. If it comes, though, from a more pure place, from a more honest place, from a more decent place, there can be success. And success is measured in a variety of ways. I have no doubt that Rusty Limbaugh actually enjoyed radio once upon a time. I don't think he does now. I don't think the Savage Wiener is fascinated with it. I think it's a life. I think it's how he supports his habits. Whether it's a boat in the bay, or your Dominican maid in the Denny's parking lot, swapping money for big boxes of pills. It's news time. We'll be back. This is the Horn.
One desire, trust it, cause I This is the Quality News Network. The space shuttle Atlantis has successfully landed in California. Two sonic booms were heard from Los Angeles to San Diego shortly before the crew of seven glided into Edwards Air Force Base. NASA managers abandoned plans for a Florida landing due to bad weather. While the Associated Press reports the White House is considering the closure of the military prison at Guantanamo Bay, more criticism of that facility surfaces. An Army officer who played a major part in the military hearings there is the first member of those military panels to criticize the process. His affidavit was released today. The U.S. is building a prison in Afghanistan for terrorist suspects, but White House officials say it is not meant to be an alternative to the Guantanamo facility. U.S. troops in Iraq continue to battle al-Qaeda militants as part of an offensive in Bakuba, north of Baghdad. The U.S. military says that more than three-quarters of the al-Qaeda leaders left the area before U.S. forces went in. However, in the Diyala province, they report at least 68 militants have been killed over 4 days. The CIA will declassify hundreds of pages of secret documents from the 1950s to the 1970s. CIA Director Michael Hayden said the information will include details about assassination attempts, domestic spying, and other activities. Next week, diplomats from America, Europe, Russia, and the United Nations will meet in Jerusalem to discuss the Hamas takeover of the Gaza Strip. That happened last week. On Monday, Israeli and Arab leaders will meet in Egypt. Assistant Secretary of State Christopher Hill wrapped up his surprise two-day visit to North Korea. He said the communist country appears to be willing to keep its pledge to halt its nuclear program. However, he cautioned that it would be a lengthy process. In Los Angeles, state regulators will revoke the operating license of an inner-city hospital, long accused of providing poor patient care. Recently, a patient died lying on the emergency room floor, while witnesses said caregivers did nothing. Some of those onlookers called 911 to try to get her help. The UC Berkeley graduate student who was driving author David Halvorsen to an interview before he was killed in a car crash, will face misdemeanor vehicle manslaughter charges for the accident. This is the Quality News Network.
Hey, what are you doing?
I'm washing my car. You want to help?
No, I don't want to be a polluter.
Whoa, I'm not polluting. I'm just washing my car.
If your car wash water is going down the street and into the bay, then you're a polluter.
Oh, really?
I'll help you clean this up, but what you should do next time is go to a local car wash.
You pay money?
Pay money for them to recycle the water and keep all that pollution out of the bay. I think it's really worth it.
Taking care of the marine sanctuary is your duty. From Mayos at Monterey High.
Don't dread the Fed. Sure, the Federal Reserve is raising interest rates. Seems like it happens every day around noon. But does that affect your home loan? Not necessarily. Talk to the pros at Gold Coast Financial. They can help you bid your dread of interest rates goodbye. Don't wait another minute. Start living in your dream home while sending your interest rate nightmares packing. Gold Coast Financial. 649-8757. 649-8757. Gold Coast Financial. 831-649-8757.
Research in the journal Science finds that the IQs of firstborns are 2 to 3 points higher than those of their younger siblings. The study finds that it's not because of genetics, but how the children are raised. The American Medical Association will decide whether video game addiction should be considered a mental illness. Japan's Hitachi has unveiled technology that actually reads a customer's brain activity to operate electronic devices. Called brain-machine interface, the technique translates brain motion into electric signals. The FDA will issue new regulations for dietary supplements such as vitamins and herbal pills. The product's manufacturers will have to test all of their ingredients first. And more colleges and universities are revoking admissions offers to students who slack off during their senior year. The Los Angeles Times reports at some schools as much as 2% of an incoming class has been dumped because of so-called senioritis. And NBC News is denying reports it will pay Paris Hilton $1 million for her first interview after she's released from jail. A spokesperson said the network doesn't pay for interviews, but it is common practice to pay for licensing of pictures and video. Light Sweet Crude is trading at $69.14 a barrel. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow tumbled 186 points, ending at 13,360. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Laurel Crisson.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Darn straight. All right, here it is, 6 minutes after the hour, second hour of the program. I'm done with the first hour's filibobster. But I can do more. You know the phone number, 304-658-5453. 304-658-5453. 877-443-2366. Learn it, know it, use it. Email bob@headonradio.com. It's conversation radio. I'd be interested to know if you think the Center for American Progress is on the right track going at it from the ownership standpoint angle, if you will. There is it's a simple fact. There is a limited amount of radio station bandwidth. There is a limited radio spectrum for licensure. Or should we just give up on terrestrial radio? With all of its too tight necktie, underwear too tight in the crotch. You know, oh, God, he said booger. We're going to fine him $500,000 and take him outside and give him a whooping. Is it too restrictive for liberals or progressives? I mean, Howard Stern, I wouldn't call him a liberal or a progressive, found it too restrictive for him and ran off to satellite radio. I don't know if Sirius is recouping what it pays him. But again, that's none of my business. But I think the reason that the Center for American Progress and the Free Press has focused on the issue of over-the-air radio is the fact that over-the-air radio is available to all. It is one of the things that does bother me about the format in which we operate, in that not everybody has an internet connection or a computer. I don't have satellite radio. I can't afford it. And therefore, that avenue of communication is closed to me. And to anyone who doesn't have a computer, this avenue of communication is closed. And my fundamental nature, my egalitarian streak is really wide. And the only place that egalitarianism can even remotely be manifested is in the so-called public airwaves. Oh, now see, I put you on hold and you hung up. You guys got no patience. See, I'm behind the board now because Agnes has bugged out. I had to go get the kids. So, you know, that's why you wind up on hold without, you know, getting to chat with Agnes. I know, it's all about chatting with Agnes. Everybody loves Agnes. Oh, Bob, give Agnes a show. Oh, Bob, why don't you take the night off and let Agnes do the show? You know, a fella could feel pretty daggum unloved pretty quick with that kind of conduct. No, I'm kidding. But, no, really... It was over-the-air terrestrial radio that took... I mean, can you imagine? Is it as astonishing to you as it is to me that the right wing was able to argue that real pensions with real retirements in dignity were bad for America, were bad for the very people that they were benefiting, and they repeated it so many times that people, the very people who were raised by people who were middle class and had the good pensions and the good wages and the benefits, their children went, "Oh, they wouldn't be saying it so much if it wasn't true. Reckon it's true. Pensions are bad. Wait a minute, I don't want to be able to go to the doctor if I'm sick and don't have insurance." National health care is communism. Okay. Oh my God, we got blown by letting right wing radio have its way. This isn't bumper stickers. This isn't the effect of direct mailing. It's not the stirring oratory of Ronald Reagan. This is a handful of semi-literate, barely educated, money-grubbing right-wing punks out there lying their rotten asses off every day for a paycheck. That's all it is. And we were snobs about it, and we said, well, yeah, only ignorant people would listen to that. That's the thing. The more you listen to right-wing radio, the more ignorant you become. Funny how it works. Let's go to the phones. Okay, be patient, everybody. You're on hold. Let's go to the phones and see who we've got. Hey, welcome to the program.
Welcome to my program.
Oh, welcome to my world. How you doing, Bob?
Welcome to the wonderful world of George Bush.
Yeah.
Now, we have to...
Stupidity. It's patriotic.
Yeah. We have to fight for every moment that we can speak to one another. And that's the stupidity of George Bush.
Yeah.
We have to scrounge, Bob. We have to fight. And we have to scrounge, and we have to dig, and we have to find a reason to speak to one another. And that's the saddest part. There are people in this nation, Bob. There are people on this planet that have no voice. I have a voice. My people know me. They respect me. They care about me as I care about you and Agnes and all of us sisters. I love what you talked about, Agnes. Agnes should have a program. Well, Agnes's sisters, like Glenda and
the Sue crew,
Suzanne and Sue.
Yeah, that you know they've named themselves now, Bob. Did you know that?
Huh?
They've named themselves. I don't know. They've gone big time. It's now officially the Sue crew. Susan, Sue, and Suzanne, the Sue crew.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Well, hey, they're sisters of mine.
I hear they've got a record coming out. No, I'm kidding.
I don't care if they got a record or if they, you know, I want them to stand, Bob.
The name of the record, by the way, Bob, is Going to the Chat Room.
Going to the Chat Room? Yeah. Well, I'm not welcome there anymore.
Don't.
Okay, I won't go there.
No, I was playing on Going to the Chapel. Remember the old song?
Go to the Chat Room. Okay, you go to the Chat Room and chat and have a good time chatting, but stand up and fight like Bob Kincaid does. Good Lord, people, I love Bob Kincaid because he has backbone. Bob, that's the one thing that made me like you the most. You got backbone. You got courage, but it's not in any other part of your body. It's in your back, and you stand up like your daddy did in World War II. Just like Ken did, you stood up. And you're standing up now just like he did back then. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I know my brothers stood up in Vietnam, and they died. By 59,000 of them, well, 58,900 and some odd, but 59,000 of them died there. So, do you people in America... I don't give a hoot in hell about Iraq. I don't give a hoot in hell about the rest of the world. Do you people that are listening in America want 59 or 60,000 dead United States young girls and young boys to die like my friends did in Vietnam? Vietnam, or do you have the courage to stand up for your convictions and stop this Bushevik piece of crap in the White House? Do you have any courage in you at all, or are you just lay-down Democrats like Nancy Pelosi and Barbara, what is her name, Walters or Barbara, whatever? Come on, people, you are the people of the United States of America. Do you not care for your Constitution that has given you life and liberty? Do you just disregard it?
Well, you know, Bob, you're touching on something that's very important there. I got a note from our good friend Sansara Taylor today from World Can't Wait.
Mm.
I don't know where they got it, how they came up with it. You know, it was just people scrambling up to put it all together. They bought a full page ad in the New York Times today. Bless their hearts. You know, these are young people. This is a generation younger than mine. I mean, this is the 20-somethings, okay? Full-page ad in the New York Times showing a planet on fire, and it's very plain, it's very graphic. It says, 2008 is too late.
There you go.
And they ask, what harm can Bush do before his term is up? Bomb Iran? Appoint another Supreme Court justice? More war? More torture? The world can't wait to drive out the Bush regime. And they're having a town hall meeting this Monday, the 25th of June, 6:30 p.m. It's a town hall meeting in New York City at the Society for Ethical Culture, 64th and Central Park West. And they're going to have a lot of folks there. Rocky Anderson is going to be there.
Good on Rocky. I like that boy when he's out there.
Mayor John Shields from Nyack, New York is going to be there. Yeah. Liam Madden, a Marine veteran and war resister like yourself.
Well, hey, I'm not a war resister.
You're a war opposer.
No, I hate war because I've been there. But I understand war better than anyone on this network because I've been there and done that. And I'm tired of these what do you call them, neocon wannabes talking about going out and doing the thing. And I asked Mike Malloy the other night, I was on that web chat
yeah,
room.
Yeah.
And I said, have any of you SOBs killed a human being? Have any of you SOBs on the Mike Malloy chat room?
Don't be calling them SOBs, Bob.
Okay, I just said
that ain't neighborly.
You, okay, sons of liberty. Okay, SOLs. Okay, sons of liberty killed a human being in the name of liberty, and they didn't. There wasn't one that could come up there and say that he had done it.
No.
But, Bob, I have, and I've killed an innocent. I have killed innocent people in the name of your liberty and Agnes's liberty and my sweet, darling, little Liza's liberty. I did it way back when, and I swear to you, my dear friend, my son, that I will never take another human life for that unjust cause. I will fight for your right to speak your mind and speak what you are telling the truth. And I tell to you people of the earth, not of America, but of the earth, this is the truth. When you take the life of another being, you give of your own soul. You give it up. It doesn't exist anymore. You are not human. You are subhuman. And that's how I think of myself.
Well, you shouldn't. You shouldn't. I don't want to argue about it. I'm telling you the simple facts, Bob. You shouldn't.
Bob, because I took life for what? A lie? Johnson? Richard M. Nixon? What was that other one that klutz that couldn't even swing a golf club but could fall down a step?
Oh, that Jerry Ford.
J.R. Ford?
Yeah. Or he's a saint now, by the way. He's a saint.
The one that followed him? Please, Bob, don't tell me I don't know what I'm talking about.
I didn't say you don't know what I'm talking what you're talking about. That's not what I said at all, Bob.
I know that, but I'm telling you, I have to look to my soul, look to your soul, Bob. Look to what your father told you. Look to what I'm telling you. Your soul tells you the truth, and I feel sorry for everything, and I repent, Bob. I repent before Jesus, and I repent before Allah, and I repent before all the gods in the pantheon of Greece. I repent for my sins before the humanity of this earth.
Then let the repentance have its effect, Bob.
I repent because I am sorry for what I did. But is there one in this administration of George W. Bush that repents for anything? No, they blame...
No. They're not in the repentant business, okay? They're in the killing business. That's the thing.
Damn it, Bob, I've been in the killing business, and I did it for real.
Yeah, but see, no. They kill from a distance, and they don't have the problems you have, Bob.
See, that's why they call me PTSD.
Yeah, they get up in the morning and they look in the mirror and they go, "Oh, I love me," and they go out and they kill some more at a distance. But it's the people they use to do the killing. It's the Bobs of the world. And guess what? There's a whole bunch of Bobs in the meat grinder in Iraq right now.
I know.
And we haven't even begun to contemplate the hell and damnation that is going to open on this country if we don't stop this madness.
Thank you. Hell and damnation that will open on this country because I have...
There's 750,000 dead civilians.
I know that. You're talking about humanity, Bob. The things that we brought those Nazi perpetrators of Germany to The Hague for. And it's time, people, that we bring these Nazis of America to The Hague. Please, people, stand up and count yourself and count me one among you. I stand with Bob Kincaid, his ilk. Yeah, you're an ilk, Bob. I listened to the show earlier.
Oh, I be ilking.
You be ilking, and I be one of your ilk, and I be one of your clan, because I stand just like that. I do not cower. I'm not afraid. I'm not. They don't frighten me, and this terrorism thing is a tactic. And if you understand anything, understand this, that terror is something that you have within yourself. You're afraid because you're afraid. And Franklin Delano Roosevelt said it best when he said, "We, the people of the United States, have nothing to fear but fear itself. And when you stop being afraid, they are." And that's what makes the Bush administration and these neocons and these neo-fascists afraid. When you stop being afraid of them, they're afraid of you. And, Bob, they're afraid of you. And, by God, I'm on one of their lists.
No. We're all on the list, Bob. We are all on the list. I haven't tried. You know, honest to God, I have not tried to get on an airplane since 9/11. I got a feeling I probably couldn't.
You know what I'm sipping on right now?
What's that?
A glass of some Australian wine that Mike Malloy was talking about, him and Kathy having after they got off the air, and I'm having a sip for you and for Kathy and for Agnes and the kids, and I'm sipping this sweet, delicious Australian wine because it ain't made in America. It's made in Australia.
I'll be honest with you. If they're collaborating in the slaughter in Iraq. So, ask John Fox.
I know John. Hey, Yeah. John's a good man, but hey, the Aussies wake up a little bit later, and yeah, you know, they follow the American triad, and I think the Brits, the Aussies, and the United States of America have held sway on this globe too long. We have held the power too long, and now it will turn against us. And people of the earth realize that I am not your enemy. I am your friend. And I, like Bob Kincaid and those other peaceful people of the United States, will not stop you from dragging George W. Bush and Richard B. Dick Cheney.
No, Richard and, B. Dick Cheney.
And
you can say that on the real radio.
The rest of this cabal of abortion that has come upon America to The Hague, and we will not stop the earth from trying them, convicting them, and doing with them as the people of the earth, those poor souls that have been tormented and tortured and been put to such horrific, unimaginable in anyone's conscience, their torments that these human beings that are my brothers and sisters and have been put through, that these animals shall be brought before either a court of humanity or before their own God, their own Christian God. This Jesus Christ, and have him judge them. And I guarantee you, Bob, they will not be found without guilt. And they will be placed in whatever they are to go to.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, just kind of,
not from me. I've pontificated tonight, have I not?
Hey, you've got that. I think you almost pontificated to the point where you get the red shoes, the pointy hat, and the magic chair.
Can I have one of them little pointy hats?
And a cracker. You get a cracker.
Oh, dang. Thank you, Bob. Thank you. By God, I'm almost human again. But, hey, I'm tired of it, and it's time that we stand up. And I said that many, many times in this network. Stand and show them your backbone. Don't be afraid of them. Look them in the eye and spit right in that eye, because when they look at you, they're blinking. And when you spit, next thing you give them hell, and you send them right where they belong. Just send them down, because, Bob, you are a good voice and a decent human being, and I just wonder, why are there not more like you?
No, they are. There are, but there's a lot of people that haven't found their voice.
Well, hey, Bob, I think you found it when you found your first left shoe. It fit your other left shoe.
Well, you know, I was born feet first, and everybody says that's...
Come on.
I was born feet first, and that's why they say I...
And that's why you had two
hit left the, feet. Hit the ground, stand up, start screaming. That's me.
Yeah. Well, hey, keep screaming, boy. You're doing a good job, and I love you for it.
All right. Thank you, Bob. You have a good weekend.
And to you, too. And hey, have a barbecue or something.
Yeah, I think I'm going to. I might even have a cider when the show's up.
Ooh, dang. Sounds like fun.
All right, you take care, Bob.
We'll talk to you later.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Our good buddy Bob in the far reaches of North Dakota, loving to death. All right, we'll be back. Take a quick break. Your phone calls, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on, or on your nickel, 304-658-5453. Hey, you know, it's Friday. This is your last chance for a couple of days. All right? I'm looking for it. I'm going to break so I can answer the phone. Okay? So I don't have to guess at who's on it. You're listening to America's Liberal Voice. You're listening to The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Workers Independent News Week in Review. I'm Doug Cunningham. The United Auto Workers Union says it's worked out a tentative labor agreement with Delphi, the giant auto parts maker that had demanded huge wage and benefits cuts after starting bankruptcy proceedings. The union issued a statement that said the UAW finalized an understanding with General Motors Friday that resulted in an agreement with its former parts operation. Delphi had threatened to use bankruptcy to destroy the union contract, but the UAW threatened a strike that stopped Delphi from throwing out that contract. 2,000 activists and leaders from the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees met in Washington, D.C. this week to plan and mobilize an army of 40,000 labor activists for the 2008 elections. Ethan Rome is AFSCME's Public Affairs Director.
This conference is about bringing 2,000 of our activists from all across the country together to make battle plans, keep the Congress in Democratic pro-worker hands, to win the presidency, to win Democratic governors and state houses all across the country.
Democratic presidential candidate John Edwards spoke at the AFSCME conference. He supports the Employee Free Choice Act to give workers the right to join unions by signing cards.
If you can join the Republican Party by signing your name to a card, or join the Democratic Party by signing your name to a card, any worker in America should be able to join a union by signing their name to a card.
Two of General Electric's largest unions, IUECWA and UE, reached tentative labor contract agreements with General Electric this week. The old contracts were set to expire at midnight last Sunday. The presidents of the two unions say they're good contract agreements, and they recommend that rank-and-file members of the unions approve the new contracts. Members will vote on the tentative agreements June 28th. Is a strike coming for 65,000 Southern California grocery workers? Jesse Russell reports.
With negotiations breaking down between Southern California grocery workers and major grocery chains, workers will cast votes Sunday to determine if they should go on strike. A strike vote would authorize United Food and Commercial Workers leadership to call a strike if the impasse continues. The union is upset with proposals from the companies concerning health care and wages. 65,000 grocery workers went on strike in 2003, resulting in the longest grocery strike in history.
New York City's Transport Workers Union is being punished by the courts for striking in 2005 to defend pensions. Automatic dues checkoff on payroll checks ended June 1st, and the union also had to pay a $2.5 million fine as part of the punishment. TWU Secretary Treasurer Ed Watt says the union is counting on the solidarity of voluntary dues payments to survive the punishment for daring to defend its pensions against New York City's Mass Transit Authority attacks.
They're actually trying to bust the union, and there's no question in our mind. They were trying to push back pension gains that we'd won over years and separate newer members from older members. One of the most common tricks in the book, but one of the most effective ways to bust the union is to split it up and get the members fighting amongst themselves so that they forget that the boss is the enemy.
You've been listening to Workers Independent News Week in Review. I'm Doug Cunningham.
Roland was a warrior from the land of the midnight sun, with a Thompson gun for hire, fighting to be done. The deal was made in Denmark on a dark and stormy day, so he set out for Biafra to join the bloody fray. Through 66 and 7, they fought the Congo War with their fingers on their triggers, knee deep in gore. Days days and nights they battled the Bantu to their knees. They killed to earn their living and to help out the Congolese.
Welcome back. Yeah, about 23 and a half minutes before the hour, and we're halfway done. Who knew? Let's go to the phones. No sense for me to sit here and babble when folks are waiting. Susan's calling from Columbia City, Oregon. Hey, Susan, welcome to the program. Oh, Susan.
Hi there.
How are you?
I'm here.
Yes, you are.
I'm here.
You are indeed.
Okay. What I wanted to mention is, first of all, a message for Gunny. If those Bushies in the White House took a knife and started sacrificing babies and buried themselves in gore up to their neck, they would never come down with PTSD. You gotta have soul to care enough to.
You gotta have a conscience. Gotta have a conscience, don't you?
Yeah. Yeah. Now, my other reason for calling, you mentioned Liam Madden.
Mm-hmm.
There is a post on the blog, The Intimidation of a Vet. The Pentagon is trying to downgrade his discharge from honorable.
Oh, not again. Not again. Wow. The David Kokesh treatment.
You bet your booties.
Well, we'll probably be winding up having Liam on the show here soon. See, I don't know. Maybe I'm in the wrong business because, you know, if I was flippant and just had a pleasant little patter, I'd say, oh, dang, that's too bad. No, it's wrong. It's wrong. Liam Madden served honorably. David Kokesh, who was on Mark Levine's show, served honorably. And the fact that they showed up wearing a fatigue shirt.
Oh, he was in uniform.
Yeah. And in the case of Liam, he only showed up wearing part of his fatigue.
That's what I mean. I'm familiar with it. Yeah, he wasn't wearing he wasn't all battle rattle or anything.
It's just appalling. Anyway.
Well, maybe that's one of those lessons they learned from Vietnam, Susan. You know, because lots of people showed up wearing those OD green fatigue shirts. Shoot, I had two or three of them as a kid growing up, bought from the Army surplus store. Wasn't anything better for going through the briars and the thorns in the woods. But, you know, you can't have people showing up at protest rallies wearing the costume. Right?
Well, I don't know about you, but as far as I'm concerned, how much do you want to bet? The news about this has already gotten to the troops in Iraq. And what do you think it's done to their morale?
Well, I'll bet you it hasn't. Honest to God, I will bet you they don't know. Because, you know, we read from that one blog called The Calm Before the Sand a few weeks ago when, we wound up not even having a full show because that was one of the nights that the series of tubes went down. But it is becoming apparent that news and information going to the troops and coming from the troops is so severely circumscribed for a very good reason. The troops are being kept in the dark. I have a feeling that the Pentagon brass knows that a whole bunch of our military is one hair on a baboon's butt away from mutiny. And the brass is scared to death of that. Frankly, you know, okay, I'll go ahead and say it. Mutiny is a rational response to what's going on over there. But rationality, Susan, has been thrown out the window.
Rational response to Vietnam.
because I say that because mutiny, it's not what I'm not talking about it in the classic definition. Yar, you'll walk the plank, matey. No. Our military.
I'm not going to do this no more.
Right, and our military is caught up in a hypocritical conundrum, Susan. Because on the one hand, they say, oh, you know, we teach them all about illegal orders, and they don't have to take no illegal orders, and they can refuse to obey an illegal order. And then they sit there and they tell, and by the way, if we give you an order, it's a legal order. There's no such thing as an illegal order. There's illegal, the war itself, remember Lieutenant Watata? They refused to let Lieutenant Watata litigate the legality of the war. Okay, the brass on the kangaroo court that tried Lieutenant Watata said, "You may not litigate the legality of this war because the president ordered this war, and if the president orders it, it's legal." Now, what does that say?
Fat squeeze.
Yeah, but do you understand what I'm saying when I say that they are in a hypocritical conundrum?
Oh, yeah.
On the one hand, they know, the brass knows. You know, they wait until they get their retirement, and then they come out and they say, boy, is this a screwed-up mess, and 18 guys die in a day or in a 24-hour period. Oh, sure is screwed up. Well, you know, those 18 might be alive if you'd had the guts and the gumption to stand up and say so, General.
Exactly.
It is an illegal war.
Made up of cowards and ass kissers.
Well, and the fact of the matter is, Susan, it's not even an illegal war anymore. I've been bamboozled by the vocabulary. It is, in fact, an illegal occupation. This isn't a war. There aren't any.
Exactly.
You know, there are no armies. It takes two to tango, and it takes a couple of armies to have a war. There aren't any armies. There's an army. And there's the people who are being occupied and hate it.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, what happened to the mainstream media? Maybe you see a little bit more of it than I do, Susan.
Fighting back.
What happened to the coverage of the Iraqi parliament actually passing a resolution saying, hey, America, get the hell out of our country? What happened to that? Did that get buried beneath Katie Couric's coverage of Paris Hilton?
Showed up.
I don't think it did either, but it was there as big as life. But bless their hearts, it's even crept over into QNN. You know,
I don't.
Paris Hilton. Jesus, I'm tired of that woman. And I'm tired of dead sex vixens. And I'm tired of missing high schoolers. And I'm tired of shark bites. And I'm there was just on the main page of CNN yesterday during the show.
Oh, yeah.
There was a story about a little girl. Bless her heart. Oh my God, what a horrible, horrible fate. Got her feet cut off at an amusement park. Okay?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. There is not a blessed thing that story does for me as an American citizen.
No.
News is a function of patriotism. News is a function of civic involvement. To tell me that there's been a 50-car pileup on I-5 does not serve the Fourth Estate. Make any sense?
I don't watch the network news anymore.
No, I don't either.
I really don't. I come up on the computer and get on the BBC, or I go to Truthout.
I cannot tell you the last TV program I watched all the way through. Honest to God, I can't.
I don't watch news on television. It's not worth the trouble.
Well, there's no there.
Just not bother. Huh?
You know,
if I want empty calories, I'll go out and eat ice cream.
Don't say ice cream. We're out of ice cream.
Oh, God, that's a fate worse than death.
Yeah. Oh, you know, speaking of which, I found two things in the freezer case a couple of weeks ago. And I mentioned the first brand because they're a very good brand and they're quality people and a quality company. From Ben & Jerry's, Now, see, this is the brilliance of what goes on the horn. We can go from slaughter in the desert to ice cream in the space of 5 minutes. From Ben and Jerry's, Willie Nelson's old-fashioned peach cobbler ice cream. I want a promotional deal with the Ben and Jerry's people because I want a bathtub full of this stuff, okay? And I want to get in it naked. Sorry, oh, that's just gross. People's eyeballs are burning. The other one was a Häagen-Dazs coconut pineapple. Holy cats! I got a pint of that. We had the whole fam-damily in the car. And I snagged a plastic spoon on the way out. Thing didn't make it five miles down the road, just getting past kid to kid to kid. Hey, give me a bite! But yeah, oh, luscious, wonderful. and there's little chunks of cobbler crust in the Willie Nelson peach cobbler stuff. Oh man, 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 man.
Oh.
But see what you do when you mention ice cream?
I had an orgasm.
When you mention ice cream, all bets are off. I mean, just please understand that.
It's just, yeah, don't do that to me. I'm going to go, I'm going to feel deprived for the rest of the month now.
Well, keep an eye out for the peach cobbler stuff. It's pretty fabulous. But I understand everything that you're saying, and I'm glad to know that the post about Liam Madden is up there. This is shameful.
Yeah.
If you serve honorably, you should get out honorably. You know, with David Kokesh, he was literally days away. He was days away from being utterly done. And he already had an honorable discharge, and they went and revised it. Rat, rotten sons of... Yeah, I know. Hey, Susan, you take care, dear. Have a wonderful weekend.
Yeah.
All right. Bye now. I don't know. Maybe it does get back to the troops. I hope it does. Hey, who am I talking to?
Well, you're talking to David in Tennessee.
Well, hey, David.
You know, we sound so happy to be talking to each other, but there's another one of those little stories that I don't think you've mentioned, and God knows the mainstream media won't touch it, talking about, you know, military people with a stroke of a pen or a pencil screwing somebody forever. Have you heard about character flaws? Have you heard about personality disorders? Have you heard about this little thing that's going down now with VA and Department of Defense?
I got a feeling I'm about to.
All right, a fella comes back from service in Iraq. He's got PTSD and all the things that go with it, and he's having a hell of a bad time, and maybe he's a veteran. Lo and behold, 2, 3, 5, 6 weeks down the road, there is a retroactive statement in this soldier's, in the service person's file. This was a personality disorder that was in place prior to deployment. Service overseas had nothing to do with it. Meaning, we no longer owe this service person.
We don't pay.
Thank you. There's no pension, there's no disability. In other words, you were a screwed up jerk before we sent you there, so now that you are potentially suicidal and a serial killer, it ain't our problem. Have a nice day. Pick a bridge and live under it.
God.
Ain't that sweet? And all it takes...
That's my country.
All it takes is a career-motivated little suck-up with a 19-cent BIC and the willingness to write it in and the credential on a job description to screw some guy that saw unspeakable things happen and potentially did unspeakable things.
Well, see, that's why I said a little bit of what I said last night, David. I don't know how we begin this dialogue or how we begin this consideration in this country, but I was the dude with the 19-cent BIC once upon a time. And I spent a couple of years doing that until it just about destroyed me, because I'd come home every day and I'd tick off the number of people I'd tried to screw over. And you can't do that. And you can't do it without ultimately having to do some penance for it, too. I have about as much pity for the person who's screwing those veterans over as I do for the people that I tried to put the wood to. And that is none.
No, for somebody to do that, and they can't. It's not like they're just moving paperwork regarding millions of dollars for millions of products that go to unknown destinations. There's none of that. There's no cloaking. There's no man behind the curtain. There's none of that. Somebody somewhere had to take one of these files and see that this otherwise normal 22-year-old guy that watched blood flow into sand and watched children scream in agony and watched women cry over mutilated corpses comes home and says, I really need help. I'm either going to be suicidal or I really don't like anybody standing around me. I feel they could injure me. And all this guy's doing is gassing a car up, you know, in a service station. And this guy, just this man or woman, with their little pick, says, no, my supervisor says that if I want to go from GS6 to GS8, I need to make sure that we have 15% fewer of these massive payouts to these recalcitrant, you know.
Malingerer, there's the word you're looking for, David, malingerer.
Thank you. I knew the guy that's the true word pro would smith it.
I'll take it an extra step further. You know, I don't even know that we deal with paper anymore, but if we deal with paper, it doesn't even require as much effort as the use of that 19-cent Bic. It's a rubber stamp, and on the rubber stamp is printed in a reverse image, and you whomp it onto the pad, and you put it onto the paper, and it says pre-existing condition.
Probably.
And there's a stack of 40 of them every morning, and our little bureaucrat, our little functionary, our little Eichmann involved in the banality of evil goes womp 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 womp, and has one of those little rubber one of those little thumb condoms on so that they can move the paper without it sticking. Womp 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 womp. Pre-existing condition. Pre-existing condition. Pre-existing condition. Is it time for lunch yet? Oh, where are we going to go?
It's another person that voted right to get the job and has about the same really mental skills as Ms. Goodling, but didn't have the good luck to be accepted but to Draw Spunky Law School.
The 142nd best law school in the country.
And probably doesn't have perfectly straight, perfectly golden, perfectly bobbed hair to her shoulder blades and looks nice when she exhibits her father's $9,000 orthodontia work.
Yeah.
Yeah, but she's going to...
But the impact is the same.
The impact is the same. Some poor son of a bitch that killed people for a living. You know, just like Peter was talking about the other night, talking about that fellow that was on the cover of the magazine, and I remember that photo. I looked that stuff up last night. I remember that guy, and on that guy's tombstone. You know, I got a medal for killing two people and got thrown out for loving one. I got thrown out for killing two men, and I got thrown out for loving one.
Yeah.
Well, those guys that are over there killing people come home, and suddenly the rug, the house, and their goods, their ability to think rationally and have somebody stand with them as they work their way through a serious mental episode in their life, zip, it's out from under them, they're on their nose, and they're even more agitated and less concerned about the people around them than they were before. You know, it's our form of building an insurgency in this country. I watch these programs. By doing what we did to Iraq, we created an insurgency. What about all these people that were screwing over viciously that come home from their time in the service and get ripped?
Well, you know, and you just opened up another can of worms, David, because a certain politician who hopes to be president of the United States addressed a certain gathering of progressives this past week. And that politician began talking about the Iraq war and started down the path, and this can of worms opened, and they started slithering out when you said, we created an insurgency, and you were so very correct. But this certain politician said, because I don't want to be accused of being a hater, this certain politician started down the road of saying, talking about how the United States being able to get out of Iraq is the problem of the Iraqis. That if the Iraqis would only end the insurgencies, if the Iraqis would only get a more viable military, if the Iraqis would only quit fighting amongst themselves, if the Iraqis would end their sectarian violence, if the Iraqis would, quit joining the police forces, grabbing the uniforms, and then using them to sneak in and blow stuff up. The Iraqis need to do this, the Iraqis need to do that. And this politician was roundly booed. But the fact of the matter is, you say, you know, we're creating an insurgency at home. To a certain extent, you're absolutely correct. And I don't know what form that's going to take. I don't know what form it's going to take in 5 or 10 years when the people that we've stamped pre-existing condition on their paperwork, unable to get the services that they desperately need, that even if we were willing to give them, we are unable to give them because we don't have the infrastructure, because we gave all the money we would be using for it away to Bush's buddies. I don't know what happens when the floor falls out from under their feet in 5 or 10 years. I don't know what happens in a cafeteria or a post office or a Jiffy Lube. I don't know, but I'm scared to death of what I think.
Or that person that somehow manages to hold it together well enough to get a job in a place that has 200 people doing minimum wage work in a confined area, and a supervisor says something that person doesn't like, and here's somebody that's familiar with weapons and ordnance, and he decides, she decides, it's just a matter of time until one of these people that snaps and decides to shoot or maim or kill coworkers is a woman. There are plenty of women at the corporal sergeant level. They're not over there hanging around the pool. They're seeing it too, and they've been trained to handle weapons, and we're going to bring them home, and after their sacrifice, we're going to cheat them out of what they deserve, just like the woman you spoke about the other night. She's going to be deported now that her husband's been killed in service of our nation.
Oh, by the way, and we're running out of time, but I found out there's another. Hers is not the only story like that.
Like you thought it would be.
Yeah, I know. I should quit hitting the crack pipe before the show.
Oh, Bob,
I know.
It's a tough time, but we've got to stay on task.
Yeah, we do. We do. We do indeed. David, thank you so very kindly.
Well, thanks for letting me rant. It's always a pleasure.
No, it's my pleasure. Believe me, it is.
Enjoy.
Take care. Good weekend.
As much as you can.
I know. You too.
I shall. You too.
Bye. And we will be back. We will be back after the news. You want to get involved? 304-658-5453, 877-443-2366. It's that easy. This is America's liberal voice. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
The Quality News Network. Reports that the White House is considering the closure of the military prison at Guantanamo Bay comes as more criticism of that facility surfaces. An Army officer who played a major part in the hearings there is the first member of those military panels to criticize the process. His affidavit was released today. The U.S. is building a prison in Afghanistan for terror suspects, but White House officials say it is not meant to be an alternative to the Guantanamo facility.
U.S. troops in Iraq continue to battle al-Qaeda militants as part of an offensive in Bakuba, north of Baghdad. The U.S. military says that more than three-quarters of the al-Qaeda leaders left the area before U.S. forces went in. However, in the Diyala province, they report at least 68 militants have been killed over 4 days. Next week, diplomats from America, Europe, and Russia, as well as the United Nations, will meet in Jerusalem to discuss the Hamas takeover of the Gaza Strip last week. On Monday, Israeli and Arab leaders will meet in Egypt. And despite the Lebanese reports that the siege has ended in the Nahr al-Bared refugee camp, troops fired more artillery and machine guns today. Lebanon's defense minister told a news agency that military operations have ended, but the camp will continue to be surrounded until the Sunni extremists surrender completely. Assistant Secretary of State Christopher Hill wrapped up his surprise two-day visit to North Korea. He said the communist country appears to be willing to keep its pledge to halt its nuclear program. However, he cautioned that it would be a lengthy process. Raids in Southern California resulted in 175 arrests. The U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement Operation netted 27 illegal aliens in Orange County who were wanted for other crimes, including murder and child molestation. Another 26 had ignored deportation orders. And the Space Shuttle Atlantis has successfully landed in California. Two sonic booms were heard from Los Angeles to San Diego shortly before a smooth landing at Edwards Air Force Base. NASA managers abandoned plans for a Florida landing due to bad weather. In South Carolina, the community of North Charleston pays tribute to 9 fallen firefighters. They died Monday fighting a huge furniture store fire. You're listening to the Quality News Network, Science and Business, next.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and the victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of rancor. You got married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. CollaborativeDivorce.tv.
Japanese tech company Hitachi has unveiled technology that can read a person's brain activity for operating electronic devices. It's called a brain-machine interface. The technique translates brain motion into electric signals. Research in the journal Science finds that the IQs of firstborns are 2 to 3 points higher than those of their younger siblings. The study finds that it's not because of genetics, though. It's how the children are raised. The FDA will issue new regulations for dietary supplements such as vitamins and herbal pills. The product's manufacturers will have to test all their ingredients first. According to a market survey, Apple's iTunes Music Store is now the third largest music retailer in the U.S. iTunes has now surpassed Amazon.com. Walmart is number one. NBC News is denying reports it will pay Paris Hilton $1 million for her first interview after she's released from jail. A spokesperson said the network doesn't pay for interviews, but it is common practice to pay for licensing and pictures. Light sweet crude oil is trading at $69.14 a barrel. At the close of Wall Street today, the Dow tumbled 186 points, ending at 13,360. The NASDAQ was down 28, and the S&P ended down 20. And there's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Laurel Krissen.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Bob.
Where's Bob? There's Bob. I'm Bob. Thanks for sticking around as we roll toward the weekend, or what I call around here the great unbearable silence. Monday seems a long way away. Long, lonesome way away. Listen, before we go to the phones, and I am going to go right back to the phones, I want to reiterate something, if I may, please, because I don't know if I thoroughly iterated it well enough the first time around. Coming up Monday, June the 25th, 6:30 p.m., the Society for Ethical Culture at 64th and Central Park West in New York City. Don't ask me for directions. Use MapQuest or something. I don't know from New York City. But what matters is what's going to happen there. A town meeting demanding impeachment of George Bush and Richard B. Dick Cheney. It will feature Mayor Rocky Anderson, Mayor John Shields of Nyack, New York, Liam Madden, whom we talked about with Susan a little bit ago. You know, me and that mouse in my pocket. Rolling Stone writer Jeff Charlotte. Our good friend Sansara Taylor from World Can't Wait. Anne Wright, Colonel retired Anne Wright, former diplomat, the woman who gave up her diplomatic post in order to protest the war. And U.S. Representative retired Major Owens of Brooklyn. Retired Congressman Major Owens of Brooklyn. Tickets in advance are $10. You can go to nyc.worldcantwait.org. You can also call area code 347-678-5905. If you're anywhere within hollering distance of the New York City area, I'm guessing this is a pretty, pretty exciting evening out. Be the best $10 you've spent in a while. I know that the show goes in. They haven't shut us down on the series of tubes that head into New York yet, so I also know that we've got some listenership there. I hope you can make it. I'd love to be there. Because I got a feeling there's going to be some fire and brimstone being brought down. Yes, indeedy. 6:30, June the 25th, Society for Ethical Culture, 64th and Central Park West in New York, New York, as we like to say where I come from. And we go to the phones. Our good friend Preston is calling from Denver. Hey, Preston, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, thanks. I must say, it's been so hot out here in Denver that your ice cream bathtub is sounding kind of good.
Yeah, it kind of does, doesn't it?
How's the weather in West Virginia?
Oh, we're getting burnt up right now.
Okay.
It's insanely hot here. I guess we're a couple of thousand feet above sea level, and it's a big plateau, and it ought not be as hot as it is right now. Let's put it this way: we're getting August right now.
I see.
And that probably means that August will actually happen in October.
Yep.
And everything's just screwed up.
Yeah, a lot of gardeners, a lot of farmers. People intimate with the seasons, they're noticing a lot, too.
Oh, our good friend Nanette down in the Coal River Valley of West Virginia is just beside herself over her garden. And I talked to my sister in Alabama not too long back. They finally had a good gully washer, but cornfields out, you know, the ones that just stretch on and on and on, acres and acres and acres, stuff is stunted. It's brown if it's not black. It's pitiful.
That's a shame. But before I forget, a couple weeks back, I had mentioned to you a book by Paul Hawken, Blessed Unrest.
Yes.
And a CD by Akil Lamar, both of which I wanted to pass along to you. But I looked on your website, and I couldn't find a mailing address.
Oh, gosh. Well, I tell you what, if you'll shoot me an email.
I'll do that.
I'll get that to you. I'd love to see and hear that and read it.
Great. You know, your earlier callers were making such great points and putting it so articulately that I'm just still kind of processing what they were talking about. But I did want to mention real quickly, here in Denver on our airwaves, you know, there's been a lot of discussion of the form of talk radio. And I must say, there have been a couple traditionally very militaristic and right-wing programs that have been doing some good work in this past week. So even short of litigation or some kind of fairness doctrine or whatever, there are people who are making choices, not just in the military, but on the airwaves, that they're not going to fight this war anymore.
Well, that is hopeful.
Yeah.
I personally am not a fan of the reimposition of something along the lines of a fairness doctrine, because that would be a great way to get the camel's nose under the tent on the internet here, where the left has a decided advantage.
Yeah.
Can you imagine if the fairness doctrine got imposed on Daily Kos?
Right. Right. It would be problematic in a lot of ways, for sure. So, I don't know. I think we can figure out a way where Rush can be on his 600 stations behind the golden microphone, and, you know, other people can be on 600 stations too behind a stainless steel microphone.
Yeah, I'm perfectly happy with my sort of dull matte finish microphone here. It seems to do the job quite well, Preston. But the thing is, let them compete, okay?
Yeah.
Like I said, I'm no Big Eddie fan. But he did speak truth when he said, you know, if in fact he's whipping that life support system for a haircut, Sean Hannity, if he's whipping him in Denver and San Diego and Seattle and Portland, then it tells me that the product is viable.
Yeah, and he's making a lot of good points. You know, he doesn't do all the analysis that I might like to see, but, you know, people often call in and fill in some gaps. And
yeah. And our good friend Tony Truppiano, who has returned to the airwaves after his political campaign in 06, Tony's filled in for Big Eddie a couple of times, and Tony does a wonderful job.
That's right.
For instance, Glenn Beck, you know, one of the guys I love to hate the most. I mean, a guy who thinks talking about blowing somebody's brains out is comedy. The things he said about Dennis Kucinich's wife, if Dennis was a good Southern boy, I don't think Glenn Beck would be breathing anymore, because we don't tolerate that kind of stuff said about our women folk, if you know what I mean. Glenn Beck is live at a time when Stephanie Miller is live. Okay. There is no way that you can convince me that Glenn Beck does a better job behind a microphone than Stephanie Miller. You ever listen to Stephanie?
Occasionally. She's not on regular radio, mm-hmm. and her show comes on when I'm at work, and I don't have access to streaming.
Okay, so, well,
I don't get a lot of it, but I've heard it a few times in the past.
It's brilliant, good fun. Nobody's going to mistake Stephanie, and I don't think she wants them to. Nobody's going to mistake her for the hardcore, in-depth political analysis.
Yeah.
But it's good. It's quick. It's fun. It's witty. It doesn't make you want to open a vein.
And she has some really talented people working with her too.
Absolutely. So, this idea of, well, you know, it's strictly commercial. Nobody wants to listen to progressive talk. That's BS, Preston, because put her head to head against Glenn Beck for 2 weeks, and Glenn Beck would be out of work.
Yeah, I totally agree.
And the other thing, as far as the market forces are concerned, that are worth thinking about, Preston, is the again Glenn Beck. Okay, I guess I'm giving him free publicity, but nobody's going to stoop to watching him. Okay, Glenn Beck sucked in his ratings when he started at Headline News, and he continues with each ratings period to redefine what it means to suck.
Yeah.
He terrible ratings, god awful ratings. They're still writing the check. So when you continue to write the check to a program that is an abject, unmitigated, unqualifiable failure, that tells me that it is not driven by market forces, that it is in fact driven by ideology, and it's driven by a desire to keep the other side from being heard.
Yeah, and he's failing even with the assistance of all the great marketing.
Yeah.
They really try to create a market for him. They give him these incredible radio opportunities. They put him on the TV every day, this cross-pollinization of the Glenn Beck trademark, And then he gets this book published, which has a huge distributor, which can buy tens of thousands of copies and send them all over the place.
Yeah, that's why you'll see the little cross, the little sword, you know, by his name on the list.
Exactly. But I want to mention specifically that the one host who I think last night in particular really did something very constructive and very progressive, and that's a guy named Gunny Bob Newman. And the gunny comes from, it's from the Marines.
Yeah, he's a gunnery sergeant.
There you go. And in the past, he's been very reactionary, doing a lot of the standard, you know, the Islam's coming to get us, Islamofascism, and all this stuff, all the attack of that religion. And other issues he's right-wing on. But last night, he had on as a guest a Muslim, I don't know if he was an Oman.
Imam,
yeah. I'm not sure if he was that or not, but he was. He did head a Islamic institute, and he spent. He gave him 3 hours to talk to the host and to all these different callers about Islam, and one stereotype after another was just that guy just dismantled it all, and even other Muslims were calling in and saying thank you for this show, recognizing how Bob in the past had been unfair to Muslims, but thanking him for the show that he was doing last night. So it was really, General Smedley Butler would have been very proud.
Good.
You know?
Good. The thing that concerns me, I think as time passes, more and more of it, Preston, it becomes impossible for people to continue to support this occupation. I'm trying to teach myself to quit calling it a war, because it isn't a war. It's an occupation. And you can't find the moral space to hide inside your brain and still support it. And as a consequence, George Bush and his bloody little cabal is going to be left standing all alone against the force of both righteousness, morality, and frankly, common fiscal sense.
Yeah.
What disturbs me, what scares me, is that what's going to happen, and okay, I guess this is a crystal ball moment, Preston. What's going to happen is you're going to see people laying the Iraq war solely at George Bush's feet.
Yeah.
And I know it's a violation of Godwin's law for me to do this, but it will be much as the you know, in the days following the Second World War, you couldn't find a member of the Nazi Party. I said several years ago that there will come a time that you will not be able to find people who will admit to voting for George Bush and supporting the war. And we're pretty nearly there now.
Yeah. It is trending that way,
and I fear that we're still evading the hard psychic, spiritual, emotional work that we have to do in this country. We have to come to terms, or I don't, you know, you don't. We were against this, but
yeah.
There's a lot of people in this country who still have to come to a reconciliation place.
Yeah, and you know, we're always discovering in other parts of our lives our own blind spots. You know, maybe not regarding the war, but you know, some other issue that we need to confront ourselves. And, you know, I don't know. It's not just Bush's war, though. In some ways, it's becoming that. But it's also, you know...
Well, that's what I mean. They're gonna try to make it Bush's war.
Yeah, yeah.
His failing approval numbers are tracking alongside the failure of support for the war.
Yeah, but... You know, this is so much the Clinton administration's war, too. I mean, it's been going on since long before this direct invasion.
No, I very well remember the words of Madeleine Albright. She says she has since repented for them, and I'll take her at her word.
Oh, I didn't know that.
But, yeah, I mean, the boycott, the blockade.
You have the bombing of the water and sewage infrastructure.
Exactly. The million children who died, the depleted uranium poisoned the landscape from the first Bush war.
And what are they saying? Just what you were saying earlier. You know, Iraq's got to do this. Iraq's got to do that. What's their problem? They got to get it together. Why can't they provide this, that, the other thing? And it's like, where are our apologies? Where are the reparations?
Precisely. We are going to, you know, we've spent a fortune on this war, and you know, we've cavalierly thrown money around to contractors. You know, you remember the $9 billion that L. Paul Bremer lost in the sofa of the Coalition Provisional Authority.
Yeah.
It's going to cost real money to rebuild Iraq. And frankly, if I was the world community, Preston, I would look at the United States and do to them, and frankly, haul out Colin Powell's pottery barn rule and hand it to us and say, you broke it, you pay for it.
Yep. And Iraq and Afghanistan, they should be signing production sharing agreements with the oil that comes out of Texas. You know, they should be getting a cut of that, you know?
Yeah.
No reason, no rule of economics that says, you know, all the wealth should come.
Gosh, that sounds like free market capitalism, doesn't it? Oh, but we can't have it in those circumstances,
right.
Now, can we?
Right.
But now the one detail that I'd like to add into this little equation is while we are on the hook to buy what we broke, we don't get to stay there to do the building, because at some point in time, and this is one of the frustrating things about the Democratic presidential candidates, nobody except Dennis Kucinich really is talking in these terms. We got to get out.
Yep.
Because we leave doesn't mean the shooting's going to stop. I understand that. There needs to be a multinational coalition force underneath the aegis of the United Nations of Arab-speaking militaries in as peacekeepers who can hear the guy on the corner saying, you know, there's a bomb down at the next corner, and understand what that means.
Yeah.
And the rebuild gets done by multinationals, and the United States should not be allowed within 1,000 miles of the rebuilding of Iraq.
Yep. You know, I was so pleased today to hear Dennis Kucinich win a straw poll that Tom Hartman took during his show.
Really?
Yeah. You know, they always say he's just not realistic, and, you know, this poll isn't scientific or anything, but still today he had this great moral victory, where people called up, they were asked which Democrat if the vote was today, who would they vote for, and he won it. And Edwards came in second, and I don't know, it was fun to see. But what he's talking about, that Department of Peace.
Yeah.
I mean, and the rich people, the people so addicted to the super rich, the luxury cars, the trips, the money, they could have it. But instead of a military-industrial complex, why not a sustainable energy complex?
I understand, and I have the same. I have a great deal of frustration with, and I mentioned it on the program last night, a great deal of frustration with my own elected representative, for whom I maintain a great deal of respect otherwise, who is trying to move heaven and earth to make sure that windmills don't go up in West Virginia, because he has been hypnotized by the myth of coal.
Yeah.
You know, when all you talk to are coal lobbyists, that's all you're ever going to think is viable.
Yeah.
We cannot build a future on something finite like coal or oil or anything else. I mean, can you imagine that coal, making liquid fuel, kerosene out of coal, that fuel actually burns dirtier than oil?
Jeez.
And that's a step forward?
Right.
Not hardly. But you're absolutely right. It's a matter of vision. It's a matter of imagination.
Yeah.
I still haven't done my railroad show yet. I picked up on the course of this trip on the rails a vision of transportation in America that's doable.
Yeah. You took a train trip?
Yeah, I did, and it was, oh boy, it was a nightmare.
Okay.
But that doesn't mean, you know, you don't throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Right. They want it to be a nightmare. You know, they want our public schools to deteriorate. You know, they want to...
Yeah, break it.
Right, exactly.
If they can't steal it, they want to destroy it.
The disaster capitalism that Naomi Klein talks about.
Exactly, and this particular train, it was bulging at its steel welds from the number of people on it. It was packed. And I later found out that our rail capacity in America is running at 105%. That's both freight and people.
Huh.
You know, the potential there, I think it was the Apollo Alliance, apolloalliance.org,
yep.
That was part of its theory was the creation of national passenger rail.
Yep.
and they estimated something like 4 to 6 million middle class paying jobs out of something like that.
Yep, I know the light rail. You know, the more urban oriented transit here in Denver, that's been very popular. You know, of course, the right wing's always harping on it and mocking it and talking about how it's over budget, but you know, when it comes to some new nuclear submarine being over budget,
that's okay.
Yeah, exactly. But still, it's popular, and in other cities, it's...
Oh, I've ridden the light rail in Pittsburgh, and that is
okay.
Brilliant.
I didn't know they had one. That's
it's
great.
It's clean. It's efficient. You know, and it goes where you want to be. You know, you ride the thing to the end, you get out, you're right smack dab in the middle of the point.
Yep.
Around everything you could possibly want to be near, it's gorgeous.
Yeah,
and you feel good about riding it. There's a future for, and I guess I'm getting geeky about rail, and you know my great grandfather laid the CNO, so it runs in my blood.
Great.
But there are alternate futures that are available to the United States, Preston, that aren't outside of our reach. That are technologically attainable and socially attainable, and all we have to do is dare to dream of them. That's why I'm not put off by when Dennis talks about something like a Department of Peace. I think it makes perfectly good sense. I think it's the logical next step from John F. Kennedy's creation of the Peace Corps.
Yeah, they try to teach us to feel silly to even think something like that.
Well, precisely.
Part of their...
And that, you know, that's one of the things that made it kind of difficult for me. I played the progressive point of view from Matthew Rothschild at the Progressive. We play it every day at some point or another during our programming. And he had an overview of the candidates, I believe, yesterday. And he ticked off the candidates and he said, and then there's, and this is Matthew Rothschild, okay? I mean, this guy should, we're about on the same page. He said, and then there's Dennis Kucinich, left wing. New Age.
Oh, no. Vegan.
Yeah, he ran down the Katie Couric litany, okay? And I'm sitting there going,
yep.
Matthew!
You know, I heard something similar, that same dynamic, just this morning from somebody very much on our side, from the Center for American Progress, a woman I respect in a lot of ways, but she started talking about Michael Moore and said, he goes too far, and he hurts the cause. And I was thinking, what?
Oh, ideological purity will be the end of us all, Preston.
You know, it's the purity, and it's also, you know, it's an indoctrination that's, you know, it's consciously cultivated by the right wing or by the perception managers or whoever to divide us.
Well, it's very interesting you should mention that, because I had a conversation with our good friend John Fox the other evening. We sit around and have post-show babbles and stuff.
Yeah.
And he was talking about Sicko, the Michael Moore movie.
Okay.
And I made the argument that I wondered if the going to Cuba scene is the end of the movie. I guess I've just ruined it for everybody.
That's okay.
I think everybody knows that by now.
Yeah.
And I made the argument that that was a deliberate sharp stick in the eye to the entire United States, and that I wondered if it was counterproductive. He could have taken him for free medical care to other countries, but he deliberately chose Cuba because it is so demonized in the United States.
Yeah, and you know, that's a specific consideration and a justified one. You know, is this, you know, what's going to be the blowback of this or that kind of thing? And if the person who I heard this morning had said something specific like that, you know, constructive criticism is very helpful, or maybe just criticism that you're just thinking about. I don't know, and it's not very good.
But
it was so vague. And then, actually, after that, what bothered me even more is then it descended into attacks about his physique and a comment.
Oh, for God's sake!
He looks like he smells like hot dogs.
No.
Yeah. Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
And this was the person you respect that said that?
Yeah. Yeah.
He looks like he smells like hot dogs?
Yeah. Well,
Okay, time out, Preston.
Okay.
What in the world's going on? What is happening to us? There's an olfactory thing that's running through our nation right now. I don't know if you've noticed it or not. Our good buddy Joe Vecchio had a great big screaming 72-square-foot purple polka-dotted hissy the other morning about the fact that, for on the one hand, Chris Matthews came out and declared that Fred Thompson smells manly.
Okay.
And there have been comments with regard to how good Mitt Romney's hair smells. And now you're telling me that you're listening to the radio and you're hearing somebody on our side of the fight say Michael Moore smells like hot dogs?
Yeah. This is Christy Harvey, actually. I don't know the center from
Progress. Oh, for pity's sakes.
Yeah.
I mean, I understand wanting to land a laugh line once in a while, but that ain't funny.
Yeah. Who again, you know, and again...
No, I've listened to Christy a million times. She used to show up on Franken's show, and I enjoyed the heck out of it.
Yeah, yeah, and, you know, we all say these things, you know, kind of thoughtless things at times, or things that we wish we hadn't said, or we wish we had said them differently. Sometimes we're saying them unconsciously, and we're not recognizing the way in which we're being fed these sorts of lines from the establishment media. You know, there's a whole kind of subtle psychological warfare.
Precisely, and that's what I'm getting at. I'm wondering if Fred Thompson smells manly and Mitt Romney's hair smells good. I'm wondering if that somehow worms its way into the zeitgeist.
There you
and
go.
The next thing you know, somebody's talking and they need to fill up 15 seconds of dead air, and they unconsciously, subconsciously go to an olfactory reference, and the next thing you know, Michael Morse looks like he smells like hot dogs.
There you go. And in a way, I think she kind of may have been even realizing that at one point, because the host who she was speaking with, Mario Solis, I forget his last name, but he's a wonderful host out of Los Angeles. He happened to be filling in for Jay Marvin here in Denver this morning.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know Mario?
No, I don't. I know Jay. I know of Jay Marvin, but
yeah. And anyway, he didn't know quite how to respond to this theme that was developing. But Sicko came up, and she said, you know, there, in that case, I think he's doing good work, and, you know, this is a huge issue for a lot of people, and so she gave him some kudos. So, you know, it's happening, and it's, I don't know, it's just something to keep aware of. I know in my own speech as well, sometimes I end up saying very stupid things, but I don't know.
Well, I try to, you know, I say some ugly things. I don't know, maybe I'd go out on the golf course and me and Rush would just have a wonderful 18 holes and we'd go in after putting out on the 18th and sit down and fire up a stogie and get a draft beer and have a high old time. I don't know. I don't think I could get that. A, I can't afford to play where he plays. B, I don't know if I'd want to give it that chance.
Right.
Because I don't want... I'll be honest, and this is my failing as a human being, Preston. Okay,
yeah.
I don't want to be buddies with that set,
right?
Because when you start getting friendly with them, you start getting like them, and I don't want to be like them.
Right, right.
You know, when I start caring more about whether or not I can get a whether or not I can get a 7:30 table away from the kitchen door at the Four Seasons than I do about whether or not my neighbor can keep food on the table to feed their family. You know what? That is the measure to me, Preston, of whether or not I am a failure as a human being. Because when I care more about the dinner reservation, it's official. The fix is in. It's all done. You know, pile up the statistics on me because I, at that point in time, am officially a failure as a human being.
I see. And
sorry.
You know, and I understand, you know, some relationships I've had to walk away from, for sure. But Rush in particular is an interesting figure because my dad actually started becoming a lot like him. In fact, my dad had even voted for Jesse Helms in the past.
Oh.
Yeah. And I remember when he first started listening to Rush, we were on the phone and he asked me, "Hey, Press, have you ever heard of a guy named Rush Limbaugh?" And at the time, I hadn't. And I asked him, I was like, "No, I haven't. But have you heard of Noam Chomsky?" And we were both, you know, that sent us off on different paths, definitely,
sure.
And conflicting paths. And we had some knockdown dragouts for sure. But I didn't want to completely separate from him, and he didn't either. And we came around in a different way and started finding points of agreement. And I don't know if that can be done with someone like Rush, because he's so committed, and I don't know, doesn't see any sort of way out. I mean,
his future
message of once you're in the family, you can't get out, kind of thing.
Yeah, and his future is committed to the division of this nation. He the further the divide, the broader the divide becomes in this country, the more he profits by it.
Yeah, the divides.
If we dialogue and if we discuss and if we process, Preston,
mm-hmm.
Rush fails.
Mm-hmm.
Hannity fails. O'Reilly fails. Wiener, Beck, the lot of them fail, because everything they do is predicated on division.
Right.
Now, I guess maybe I'm equally guilty, or guilty to some comparable degree, because what I was saying earlier about worrying about the swing toward opposing this war, I welcome everybody to oppose the war. Everybody should. But finally coming around and opposing the war does not amount to reconciliation, and it does not amount to repentance, and it doesn't amount to it certainly doesn't amount to creating a bridge over that divide, because there are still a whole bunch of issues that have to be worked on as well. And that's why I say I'm concerned about Michael Moore, the response to Sicko, for instance, because I know that the right wing, being such as it is, has already created an entire cottage industry, if you will,
mm-hmm.
for opposing the points that are going to be brought out.
Yeah.
And as a consequence of that, when he went to Cuba for the treatment of these people who so desperately needed medical treatment, you create an opportunity for the right wing to say, see, the only way we can have national health care is to be communist. National health care is communism.
And, you know, Castro's a tyrant, and, you know, there are oppressed people, and, you know, and there's always elements of truth. But they'll take an ounce of truth and create a pound of deception from it.
Precisely. So, I mean, does that have any kind of a ring of truth to it for you? You know, the idea that we
consideration, but I think we're okay. You know, I think it's going to be overcome, because for years there's been a very interesting effort for people, all sorts of professionals, journalists, doctors, dancers, to get to know Cuba for themselves, and I think they've helped to prevent a direct invasion of that country. Actually, those ties that have been created, the solidarity, through all sorts of professional associations and just curiosity and travel. And
yeah, was it Ry Cooter that went to Cuba and did the, what was it, the Buena Vista Social Club?
I think you're right.
That's bridge building.
Yep. And speaking of movies in Cuba, I just saw the most incredible film. It's called Salud, and it means health in Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
And it features all sorts of doctors, like Paul Farmer, who's been learning about Cuba and living in Haiti and studying healthcare worldwide and the need for it to be globally universal. Jimmy Carter is actually also in this film, talking about how Cuba has created, among what are called developing nations, the best healthcare system in the world, and their outreach is unparalleled. And that's what this movie was about, was these 100,000 health diplomats that Cuba has sent to about over 100 countries in the world, building relationships, taking care of underserved communities. They even started just last year a global medical health hospital where everybody goes for free, and they're coming from Africa, they're coming from throughout Latin America, they're coming from the Bronx, and they're getting free medical educations in Cuba. So it's been a beautiful, I mean, that's in this film brought this out in such a beautiful way, and
real medicine, quality medicine, not because the disinformation that has flowed out of it has been monumental. Impressions have created you can get free medical care in Cuba, but you know, it's not like we've got, it's not the good stuff,
right? Right.
You know, is this, you know, as if they would have us believe that France or Britain or Canada won't sell Cuba a CAT scan or an MRI.
Right. And, you know, they can't afford all the fancy gadgetry. I mean, they're under a 40-year embargo, basically. But they manage. They get help from other nations. And also, they apply a lot of simple things. Like, they've been putting up these nets in Africa to help cut down on, you know, mosquito bites, which leads to malaria sometimes.
Right.
And, you know. And
preventive health care.
Yeah.
Of course, Cuba does, in many ways, Cuba doesn't have some of the very profound problems we have because they don't eat a diet that is primarily consisting of number two field grade corn and petroleum.
Right.
The rice and beans will go a long way toward keeping you alive for a lot longer time.
Yep.
I forget what the statistic is, but the very wealthiest, the average age of the average lifespan of the very wealthiest class in America is lower than the average lifespan of the lowest class in Great Britain.
There you go.
There's a wake-up call.
Right. And how many more interventions do we tend to have? You know, major reconstructions of something or another.
You know, I'm guessing that even for the addicts among us like me, I'm a tobacco junkie, I'm guessing that the tobacco they smoke in Cuba is actually tobacco.
Yep.
And not the ginned-up, dummied-up garbage that's got crap added to it
right.
that I partake of here.
Right.
I'm guessing their smokers are healthier than our smokers.
I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, there what something like 100 chemicals in some of these cigarettes?
No, it's monstrous, and it's done. Like I said, I've quit, and if when you start back, it's like you have to catch up. It's monstrous.
Yep. Before I let you go, I'm sure other people want to speak with you. Earlier, we were talking about sustainable energy and transportation infrastructure and how we need to dream and envision different things. Even if we feel silly about doing it sometimes, the dreams can be helpful.
Yes.
There are also things that we need to remember, old technologies that are part of the American tradition, like trolleys and walkable cities. A lot of big cities have these wonderfully pedestrian-friendly neighborhoods. And that's here in Denver in Capitol Hill. I hardly even have to use the light rail. I'm a big fan of it, but I usually can walk.
I love the idea of a walkable city. It's generally a friendlier city, and it's also a safer city.
Yeah.
Because there are more people out, and the presence of people tends to reduce crime.
Yep. And tends to reduce the ability of the media to make us so frightened of everything.
Yeah, because if you get out and you meet your neighbor, and even if they talk different than you do, you tend to find out they're human, they're decent, and you got a lot in common. Exactly. Preston, you know what? I love our phone conversations. I just love our conversations, and I know that the listeners do as well, and I thank you very, very much, and hope you have a great weekend.
You too, and likewise for everybody in your audience.
Well, thank you very kindly. Take care. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Our good friend Preston in Denver. We'll take a quick little break. Hey, I got something for you. I mentioned Buena Vista Social Club. Check this out. This is yummy. Oh. We'll be back. This is America's Liberal Voice. I'm Bob Kincaid. Give me a rum and a little bit of lime, will you?
Charlie Shears. This coming Tuesday, June 26th, the Head On Radio Network will go dark. I believe this is the right thing to do, and the Horn feels very strongly that an attack on one segment of Internet radio constitutes an attack on all Internet radio. On the day of the standdown, Head On will keep the chat room open, so pop in to show your support. Try to imagine conversation radio without music. I know I can't.
I can't see
And again, I was talking about the Republican debate. So we'll get to the point where we're going to drag a terrorist out to the stage with the Republicans, and they're all going to take turns kicking him in the nuts and see who the audience cheers for the most. That's going to determine who's going to be the Republican candidate. Because that's what they are. Kick him in the nuts. How do they do that on South Park? Rochambeau. They're going to Rochambeau the terrorists.
Come on, rub my nipples while I torture this little piggy.
No, that sounds pretty sweet to me.
The Cup of Joe radio show with your host, the working man's thinking man, Joe Vecchio. 11 a.m. to noon weekdays here on the Head On Radio Network, America's liberal voice.
Howdy, this is Baxter Black, and if you're like me, you're concerned that the environment we enjoy today may not be around for our children and grandchildren. All the new technology in the world can't create more sky over our heads or new oceans. The Earth's natural resources, fresh water, land, and even the air we breathe are limited. Voluntary family planning improves the health of women and their children. It also helps slow population growth, which is good for our planet. So help ensure that people everywhere have access to the information and services they need to plan their families and help build a healthy future for us all. Population Action International is working to promote voluntary family planning around the world. Visit us at www.populationaction.org. That's populationaction.org.
Introducing Pablo Escobar. Trained at the School of the Americas. Another day making hay up in Hollywood.
All right, about 11 minutes before the hour, and we'll just wind it down now. Couple of things. You know, I am so very guilty. I know this is supposed to be news and stuff, but the fact of the matter is, I get as much from you as you could possibly ever get from me, and I'd rather carry these conversations on than sit here and read to you off copy. So I've missed out on a couple of stories in the last couple of days. If the entire world hasn't burned it up by the time that I get to it, we'll hit it on Monday before the great stand down of Tuesday. Still trying to get somebody on the show to talk about that. The declaration by Dick Cheney that he is not a member of the executive branch. I'd love to know what you think about that. We'll talk about that Monday. Also on Monday, I just sort of dropped it as an oh, by the way, I assume that... See, I know how smart you guys are. And as a consequence of that, I make certain assumptions about how you inform yourselves, because generally, you know, you share stories with me. And when a whole bunch of people share the same story with me, I feel like I'm sort of... It's almost insulting for me to do the story, because... Well, you've already done it. But at any rate, I dropped it as an almost aside last night in talking about the Transportation Security Authority what was the word there? Hassling the mother with the 18-month-old toddler. I showed that video to Agnes last night after the show, by the way. And again, it was another 75-square-foot purple polka-dotted scream and hissy. But in the course of describing that story, I mentioned in passing these recently disclosed documents from the FBI that were obtained via a lawsuit by Judicial Watch. And damnedest thing. On the documents, you can see, as plain, and of course, the spin machine that and perception management that Preston mentioned a few minutes ago has already gone into overdrive. An FBI consultant was on Wurfblitzer on the Chicken Noodle News Network yesterday, and or was it today? It's sometime. It all runs together. It's a 24-hour news cycle. Screw it. Declare it, and Wolf said, "Well, all this sounds like conspiracy theory to me. Does it sound that way to you, former FBI agent consultant?"
"Why, yes, Wolf, it does. It sounds like a conspiracy theory."
"Oh, look, I'm doing the story anyway." Well, here's the conspiracy theory. And again, I described it last night. You know, redacted documents from the federal government, they get those heavy black, you can't read through it, but magic markers that if you take the cap off and you sit there and, oh, wow, oh, everything is beautiful, you know, those kind of markers. And they wipe through names, and it's called redacting, and you know that. Well, we've got the unredacted documents now, the Judicial Watch did, from the FBI regarding the secret flight that didn't happen, where all the members of the Saudi royal family left the country. And I'm reading from the little sucker right now, right here in front of me. Event. On 9/19/01, a 727 plane left LAX, Ryan flight number 441 to Orlando, Florida, with ETA of 4 to 5 p.m. The plane was chartered. This is a chartered 727, okay? The plane was chartered either by the Saudi Arabian royalty family or, and this is where the redaction was, this is what the Bush administration Justice Department didn't want you to see back in 2001. They took out and they huffed the marker a little bit and then they went, oh, cool. And they wiped out the name where it says Saudi. The plane was chartered either by the Saudi Arabian royalty family or Osama bin Laden. The flight has 7 people, including 5 crew members, a bunch of redaction, and an off-duty unarmed LAPD officer. The tail number on the plane is yada yada. Charter company being Ryan International Airlines, who, you know, has, you know, hello, I need to rent me a 727. Yeah, those are the guys you call. Upon arrival to Orlando, are going to be picked up. From Orlando, the plane is scheduled to land at Dulles Airport to pick up unknown individuals. From Dulles, the plane is scheduled to fly to Boston and pick up. This airplane has no more than 30 seats on the plane. After Boston, the same plane is either flying to Iceland or the passengers will switch planes and fly to Geneva, Switz. Prior to the flight leaving LAX, the LA FBI searched the plane luggage, of which nothing unusual was found. I requote, the plane was chartered either by the Saudi Arabian royalty family or Osama bin Laden. And see, that's the part where Wolf Blitzer says, I don't see any conspiracy theory. There's a lot of conspiracy theories here. Don't you think there's conspiracy theories? Oh, yes, Wolf, I believe it's all conspiracy theories. Everybody take your medicine. Yes, it's all conspiracy theory. It says Osama bin Laden, for the love of Jesus. I mean, if Osama bin Laden, you know, Osama bin, you know, they didn't know who chartered the plane. That was just somebody. That could have been the, see, they said the Saudi royal family first, or Osama bin Laden. Mostly it was the Saudi royal family, okay? I mean, it could have been somebody else. It could have been the Saudi royal family or Bob Kincaid. The second guy doesn't matter. Yeah, the second guy matters. Oh, my God. so we're doing the story anyway. Yeah, it does. It does. It really kind of does matter because, you know, you kind of got to book flights. Ryan International Airlines, with their 727 for rent that only holds 30 people, somebody's got to call up and say, "Good afternoon. Thank you for calling Ryan International Flights. How may I help you?" "Hello. This is Osama bin Laden, and I would like to rent a Boeing 727. Do you have one handy?" "Oh, just a moment. Let me check." "It's a Mr. bin Laden wants to know if we got a 727. Do we, Harry, do we have a 727? "Yeah, we got a 727 just sitting there on the lot. Going cheap." "There's nothing here. Nothing to look at. Keep moving. Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. The, you know, the 6'7" Arab with the portable dialysis machine and the white robes." Mother of God. Well, yeah, we wound up in... Okay. So the show's over. But everything going... The weekend has not gotten here yet. Peter Godbold is sitting in his plaid pajamas with a Florida State t-shirt on in his bedroom in the wilds of rural Florida, ready to bring to you America's only homosexual agenda radio program that's on wheels. Stick around. Thanks, everybody. Thanks to Agnes for the time she was here. Thanks to John Fox, our engineer. Many, many, many thanks to Ben Birch, the hardest working man in liberal talk. Thanks to the United Brotherhood of Carpenters, who helped us get this network started. They build the American dream, and by helping us start this network, they're saving the American dream. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.
News Network. U.S. troops are reporting an increase in Iranian-trained and armed Shiite extremists rising up against the surge that started by U.S. troops in Iraq 3 days ago. Militants struck Baghdad's Green Zone with mortars today, injuring no one. However, 14 U.S. soldiers died in the past 2 days, mainly from powerful roadside bombs. As they work to eradicate each village of insurgents, coalition forces have come across booby-trapped houses weapons stockpiles, and even a torture house. 68 al-Qaeda Iraq militants have been killed so far. Iran continues to deny any government-led participation in the violence. Iran's interior minister was quoted today saying that his country has enriched 220 pounds of uranium. Experts say 1,100 pounds are needed to make a bomb. The Israeli Air Force has been training for long-range flights to be ready for potential attacks on Iran's nuclear targets. The commander of the multinational corps in Iraq today said that they cited three reasons for optimism. Attacks in Ramadi are at a two-year low, car and truck bombs are down, and thirdly, former enemy tribes and insurgent groups are switching sides and joining coalition forces to fight al-Qaeda. The Associated Press is reporting that NATO and coalition forces killed about 60 insurgents along the Afghanistan-Pakistan border. Forces say the attack came as the largest insurgent formation seen since January tried to cross the border into Afghanistan. The Guantanamo Bay prison controversy is escalating. A meeting with President Bush and his top advisors was canceled today. Condoleezza Rice has been directed by the president to work with other countries to get them to repatriate detainees to their home countries. There's also speculation that the U.S. is helping build a prison in Afghanistan. Cleanup has begun in a Palestinian refugee camp north of Tripoli after the Lebanese government announced victory yesterday in its battle against Islamic militants. A peace summit in Jerusalem is bringing together envoys from the U.S., the U.N., Russia, and the European Union. In Charleston,